Seat, please, and we will convene our meeting, and welcome to the July 20th Board of Supervisors meeting. And I would ask at this time if you would join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Like I'll wait till the crowd rustles in.
Please say with me,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have quite a crowd, so I'll welcome you all in. We're all here with the exception of Supervisor Patterson. He is working on international relations with China at this particular point, so he will. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda.
The changes to today's agenda are we have an amended item, C2, a hearing to consider a protest by the Pacific West Energy Solutions Incorporated regarding the county's selection of Electric Craft Incorporated to perform retrofit lighting, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in the county buildings and facilities. Staff is recommending this item be amended by adding a page to Exhibit A that was inadvertently left out of the packet. The page is attached for your approval. Added item to closed session, pending litigation, A, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, 16, Land Watch, San Luis Obispo County versus County of San Luis Obispo et al., and 17, North County Watch versus County of San Luis Obispo, CV098031, Santa Margarita Subdivision Matter. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll get started with our consent items, and I have a request to speak on A1, Mr. Jeff Wurst.
Morning, Chairman Meacham, Honorable Board, Jeff Wurst, Design Engineer for County Public Works Department. My comments concerning A1 and the consent agenda involve a minor clarification of the plans and specifications that were associated with the item. Item A1 includes our department's recommendation that your board approve the project and adopt the plans and specifications for construction of improvements along Chelan Valley Road between State Highway 46 and Monterey County Line. Our contract 245R12B515, and the recommendation is also that your board authorize the contract to be advertised for construction bids on August 9th, which is a Monday. In the clerk's file copy of the plans and specifications that were transmitted with the letter, the notice to bidder section incorrectly stated that the bid opening would occur on a Thursday. So the recommended bid opening date of August 9th prescribed in the board letter is correct, and that will remain unchanged. But I just wanted to advise you that we intend to clarify that in the notice to bidders before we advertise that the bid opening will occur on a Monday. So that was it.
Thank you. Ken Daniels on A2, and then I have Dale Strobeck on A4.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, board members. I just wanted to clarify in item A2 that the 5-county comp was used to establish the salary rate for the law enforcement management unit. And I have a question as to whether or not the pension rate increase that is shown in the staff report includes the 2010 pension rate increase. And to comment that I'm glad to see that there won't be a problem for those members of the Law Enforcement Managers Association that are in the DROP program. This is the same problem that we have encountered and tried to resolve by way of a side letter and were unsuccessful in doing for the persons that we represent, the 5 people that we represent that were caught in the same situation. So if I could get those questions answered, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Strobridge on A4 and then Kim Daniels on A5.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Board. Today brings the hallmark occasion of the Board of Supervisors recognizing peace officer status, limited peace officer status for our correctional officers, with recognition of Senate Bill SB 490. which will provide limited peace officer status to all of our correctional officer classifications within the jail. With this hallmark occasion, it will finally conclude all of the peace officer protection that's provided in the code for any on-duty injury, as well as charging authority for any officer that's assaulted in the line of duty. In the back of the room, we have the latest correctional officer that was assaulted and sustained a serious injury, Vince Hartman, in the back of the room, and just about a week ago. So again, I want to thank the board for moving this along and for staff's cooperation in this, and thank you on behalf of the correctional officers.
Welcome. And Kim, before I get you, I have another one on that same item. Mike Thompson.
Good morning, Mike Thompson, Correctional Sergeant. Just like to say thank you to the Board of Supervisors on behalf of all the correctional officers. This really adds a level of security for our families that we deeply appreciate.
Thank you. Ms. Daniels on A5, and then we'll jump to Julie Rodewald on A12.
And I just have a question on A5. Good morning, Kim Daniels. I would like to know if the Probation Officers Association members were charged with a pension rate increase for the 2010 pension adjustments. It's not clear in the staff report. And if I could get that question answered. Thank you.
Okay. Our illustrious clerk recorder.
Good morning, Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I'm just here to, put the June 22nd election to bed. You have the certification before you. Just an update on that. San Luis Obispo County had what I consider a very low turnout of 37.72%, but we were 6 percentage points higher than the average for Senate District 15 and beat out some of our other counties by at least 12%. So at least our voters did turn out in greater numbers. It's still disappointing that it was that low. As to reimbursement, just an update on that. There is a bill out there that's in active status right now for reimbursement for all counties that would have special elections in 2009-2010. The word that we hear is even if it's passed, that it will be a long time coming. So we won't be looking forward to reimbursement anytime soon. But I did want to just once again thank all of those people who helped us with the June 22nd election, our poll workers, the other county departments who pitched in, just a great number of people. One Saturday we had over 26 people show up from other county departments, and they helped us open about 27,000 ballots in 3.5 hours. And it was inspiring that we actually thought we can pull this off with these two elections. But we couldn't have done it without all the other help that we had. And just a reminder to voters that it's not over. Yesterday we sent out vote by mail ballots and sample ballots for the August 17th election. We're already seeing those come back in, so we hope that we get a much better than 37.92% turnout for that election. Thank you.
So we need to keep that inspirational drive going because we still have two more elections to go.
That's right. Don't get tired yet. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate all your work. That was my last request to speak. Can I get some answers from Ms. Daniels on item A5 and A1, please?
Yes, thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrator. We have Tammy Douglas Schatz, the HR Director, to answer those questions.
Thank you, Jim. Chairman Meacham, members of the board, Tammy Douglas Schatz, Human Resources. I'll start with the Sheriff's Management Association Agreement. I think Ms. Daniels' questions were regarding several items. One, the DROP program. We were able to negotiate the agreement with Sheriff's Management on the DROP program while we were at the table. Although I was not at the table or involved in the negotiations with the DROP when SLOCIA negotiated it, my understanding, based on notes from what the information we have from that negotiation, is that that SLOCIA originally agreed to not have the DROP people covered in that, and then changed their minds after we had already closed the contract. So what we offered to do was to come to the table, and we're at the table now, so we can talk about that as well as any other items. In addition, Sheriff's Management's increase was based on our status quo agreement with them, so we did not do a separate, we did not.
I've heard that from some of my constituents.
We didn't do a separate salary study for sheriff's management. We had a status quo agreement with them that we needed to offer, so their 2.98 originates from the DSA survey. And we are in contract negotiations with that group now, and their pension increase actually exceeds the 2010 requirements, so we thank them for that. And I believe she also had a question with regard to the probation officers, and they are caught up with their pension increase, so we thank them for that.
Thank you, Ms. Schatz. And I hope, young man, you're recovering from your injury that you had, and we wish you the best and get back to, hoping you get back to work as soon as you can, Vince. With that, I'll bring it to the board for items that they want to discuss on consent. Mr. Gibson.
Short comment on A3 and 4.
Mr. Asajian.
None, thank you.
And Mr. Hill.
Comment on A4, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also thank both members of the DSA staff, particular HR director. It was, I thought, a very rational discussion, and I think we've come to a good decision here. Among the protections offered the correctional officers, I think, are richly deserved, but there are also efficiencies that are going to be seen in the jail. So I think we've got benefit on both sides, and pleased that we've worked out the details that allowed us to get here.
And A4?
Same comment.
Mr. Hill.
Similarly, yeah, I think that this is a good improvement to operations in the department and in the jail, also in the community, since it will allow correctional officers to be mobilized as peace officers in unusual events. It provides them with a certain amount of protection for them and their families, and also this doesn't impact salary or benefits, and so I think it's fair for everybody in the community, and I also thank Ms. Douglas Schatz and Mr. Grant for getting this done.
Thank you, Mr. Hill, and I can't really add to that. I think that they've done a commendable job, and I wouldn't want these guys' job out there in that as a correctional officer, but I do appreciate what you do, and as the board does. So with that, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second?
As amended.
As amended, thank you. First by Mr. Gibson, seconded by Mr. Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. And I'd entertain a motion to approve the presentation.
So moved.
Second? Moved by Supervisor Asajian, seconded by Supervisor Hill. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? If we need a roll call. Oh, I'm sorry, we need a roll call. Resolution.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. And at this time, it's my pleasure to ask Mr. Salio to please come forward. And this is a resolution that is proclaiming July 18th to the 24th as Probation Services Week. Whereas probation is an essential part of the criminal and juvenile justice system, and probation officers and juvenile services officers uphold the law with dignity while recognizing the right of the public to be safeguarded from criminal activity. And whereas probation department employees are responsible for supervising approximately 3,000 adult and 1,000 juvenile offenders in the community, and the probation department works in partnership with the community agencies and groups. And whereas the probation department promotes evidence-based practices in community corrections, and the probation department provides services, support, and protection for victims, bringing in an average of $56,000 a month in victim restitution. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim July 18th through the 24th, 2010, as Probation Services Week, and encourages all citizens to honor these community corrections professionals and to recognize their achievements. Sally O., thank you. The lectern is yours, sir.
Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. I'd like to thank the board for adopting this resolution. The work of the probation department many times goes unsung and unrecognized, but I can guarantee you that the women and men of the probation department are hardworking, dedicated staff committed to the protection of this community. I think they do an outstanding job. Again, I would just like to thank the board for making this passing this resolution and recognizing all their hard work. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to observe two things about the probation department. I've had the chance to see a very tiny bit of what you do firsthand, and what I've seen has been inspiring. Your personnel care so deeply for members of this community, in particular the youth of this community. It's a pleasure to see them in action. I think the other thing that goes a little under-noticed is the amount of collaboration your department does with offices like the County Office of Education and other agencies within the county and outside. And I think it's through those collaborations that we get a tremendous result, particularly as we dig in on the very difficult issues such as gangs and the like. I know your department's been very active in the Anti-Gang Coordinating Commission, and I look forward to seeing more inspirational results in that field.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brings us to our public comment portion of the agenda. We're just getting started. Where's everybody going? First will be Mr. DeFatta, and followed by Gwen Taylor. Good morning, sir. Good
morning, Supervisors. Ben DeFatta here. Want to clear a room? Mention a Los Osos sewer. This coming January 1st, 2011, there will be many tax increases by all layers of national and local governments. It is predicted that another wave of 1 million foreclosures will happen this year, and counting last year's 1 million, it will equal 2 million foreclosures in 2 years. Higher inflation, more homelessness, more unemployment, more people on welfare, more destruction of the middle class, more economic hardships that will ripple throughout this county and country. In Los Osos, the failure of the second 218 vote on those unimproved lots, according to Mr. Gibson, the cost will be picked up by the rest of the property owners in the zone. The monthly bill will likely be closer to $400 a month. Gentlemen, this is excessive taxation. If you think things are bad now, wait till the property owners get their assessments of $300 or more a month, which equals $3,600 or more a year for the next 40 years. This county's refusal to look at alternatives that would save at least $50 million or more using low pressure or vacuum system is an act of cruelty towards the citizens of Los Osos and elsewhere. The cost of this project is directly related to this county's violation of laws and contracting statutes. The best value must be competitively bid. That was what was voted by the county all along and approved by your past Board of Supervisors. Stepping under alternatives is in all the county's proposals, the 218, the EIR, the permits. I don't see how you can deny that. Gentlemen, it's not a gravity collection world anymore. There are other ways to transport and treat waste that's better than your lousy, expensive, unaffordable, stinking, leaky 900 manholes, a dozen pump stations, and expensive maintenance gravity biolac sewer project. All I see is another failure and more delays to sewer Los Osos. There's still time to change. Do the right thing for a change. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen, please. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The need for a basin-wide management plan with a basin-wide ordinance to cover all the groundwaters in the Los Osos Basin is imperative. It appears there is no preclusion for the county to develop a groundwater basin management plan and ordinance. Assembly Bill 2701 states the county's efforts may be include programs and projects for recharging aquifer, presently saltwater intrusion, and managing groundwater resources to the extent that they are related to the wastewater project. The ISJ calls for a basin plan. The Coastal Commission included a condition related to groundwater management plan. The county, as the lead agency, has the responsibility to the Los Osos community to protect our only water source. Time is of the essence. The saltwater intrusion is insidious and is advancing more rapidly than addressed. The past 4 years, it has advanced twice as far as it did in the previous 20 years. Changing the subject, but not. The 27th, which is next Tuesday of July, is supposed to be an update of the wastewater project. Will cost to each residential property owner be a part of this update? I would appreciate that answer, and I'm sure the community would like to know what they are supposed to be budgeting, if they can even budget the amount of money that they are going to be charged. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, followed by Eric Greening, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I wanted to start off speaking about the fact that you're working on this homelessness plan, and I think the Duval Ranch is part of the whole issue. One of my little examples would be the way that you're approaching the homelessness issue is that you will, rather than put the buildings on the Duval property, give them to him, the safe buildings, so that he can house his 50, these are people that definitely need drug and alcohol and psychiatric services, and he has an excellent working farm that makes these people come through in the end and be able to function well in society. And it's worked. He is the role model that you are not looking at. And unfortunately, you're going to go ahead and take the people off his property, use federal funding to house them for 18 months, and when that's all used up, we're back to the same problem. So I feel like that's what's happening in Los Osos. You cannot simultaneously be battling homelessness and poverty and at the same time work to approve the most expensive project that you could find for a sewer project. There are so many solutions that were not looked at, and I will blame Pablo Ogren, and I will also blame Mr. Gibson for, and I will blame all five of you for not participating in that competitive process. When we went to the park, to the sales lot to buy a vehicle to drive because we needed one, you went ahead and supported that we buy the big Humvee. You sat there and just approved it when we kept saying, you know, the smaller Prius will do. The used Prius even would do. We don't need a big fancy sewer. We have a minor problem in Los Osos with nitrates. And yes, we need a sewer, but we don't need a Cadillac. So anyway, I'm very curious what the cost will be. It's gone from $165 million up to $181 million. You have a section, you have $40 million that is not going to come to our project because your 218 vote, which is on the undeveloped properties, these people are going to be asked to pay $300 a month themselves for property that they cannot build on still because the saltwater was ignored for so long. So we're just, the price goes up, it notches up by $10 million at a time at least, is what I see. You also have seven new conditions. Where's the money going to come to improve, to fill those conditions and meet those problems? This project is nothing but flawed. It had 27 appeals, it had conditions coming from every direction. It's a bad project, and you do have the chance to still go back and get a competitive bid that would let us look at a competition that we can afford right now. I'm begging you, I will continue begging you every week of the month until we see something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Greening, followed by Mr. Barrow.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening with multiple topics this time. I guess starting with the Los Osos sewer, since it's being talked about. At this month's Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting, I had a question that no one there could answer, and I'm hoping that answer can be part of next week's update. We were looking at the Integrated Water Management Program implementation grant applications that are due next January, and one of the program preferences for this earworm granting is conservation program implementation. And I know that the Coastal Commission conditioned this project with a specific, to prepare and implement a specific conservation program, and presumably agreements would have to be drawn up with the water purveyors and so on. My question is, can that be credibly fleshed out and written and perhaps credibly a path to implementation in time for it to be part of the application by January 2011? I know there's a lot of work to be done, but it would strengthen that application if it were there. So that's my question on the sewer. Santa Margarita matter, and I'm sorry to see Mr. Patterson missing. I'm hoping someone can tell me whether he is well or not.
He is well.
Good, thank you. Right now, there is a major nightly parade of gravel trucks through that community. They stack at the Highway 58 park and ride. I saw them stacked there at 6 o'clock, and then they're running all night. The understanding of the community is the project they're doing this for is the resurfacing project that is very much needed, but they didn't realize this would be an impact or the extent of the impact, and the reason they didn't is because this is one of the 100 projects that the governor preemptorily exempted from CEQA. So I think that underscores the fact that it's not a favor to our communities to exempt a project from CEQA. It's probably work that would be done anyway, but the community might be able to have a word in terms of mitigating the impacts. Speaking of impacts and mitigation, I'm going to continue something I announced last week. As we know, the budget you passed was awaiting for the other shoe to drop budget, and the shape and size of the shoe that drops from Sacramento determines how ugly or less ugly it gets. And there will be a March for Humanity next week, Thursday the 29th, assembling at Mitchell Park at 5 p.m., marching through the farmers market, and essentially to try to minimize the damage of the shoe that the legislature could drop on it. More on that next week, but just keep the date. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Barrow, followed by Mr. Sadowski, please.
Yes, you did say that I could show this.
Yes.
So if somebody would turn that on for 10 seconds.
He's working on it.
This is what Mr. Greening was announcing, and this has the phone numbers of the people. I hope you can read that. March for Humanity against state budget cuts. Thank you for that. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing. I did get a message from the IRS today that they're going to approve my nonprofit status for Coalition for Low Income Housing, which is good news, so I can help with the homelessness and low income housing more than I have been able to. I'd like to show what I have on my screen right now. This is a picture of the deep water horizon spill. That was created by a spill of between 20 and 100,000 gallons a day, according to BP and other experts. I want to draw an analogy because the Los Osos sewer will leak about 10 to 15% of its collection. And that's on a parallel with this, except this spill is over thousands of square miles. The Los Osos sewer collection area is only 9 square miles. We will have the same amount of raw sewage flowing from these pipes over time in our drinking water aquifer. Thought that was important for everyone to know. The Coastal Commission has refused liability on this project, although they did issue a permit for it. The sewer collection is a liquefaction zone on the drinking water supply with 20,000 joints. And these joints will, let's see if I can get this next piece up. Will leak. I'm having a tough time getting my slides. The to go up. But the pictures that I was going to show you, which don't seem to be coming on, are roots that invade the joints in the system. There are 20,000 joints in the pipes, so that will create a problem. The further problem will be created by the fact that if we have an earthquake on any one of the two 6.8 or 7.3 magnitude faults that are in a 10-mile radius of this collection zone, we will lose the slope of the pipes, and we will not be able to collect by gravity anymore. And I think that's something we all should know. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow. Mr. Sadowski, please, followed by Michael Wynn. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Richard Sadowski. I'm a resident of North Morro Bay. I had the pleasure of serving on the 2009-2010 grand jury. It was a very good experience. I recommend it to others to apply. In that light, I went to Sacramento for a grand jury training, and during that time, there was a symposium that was hosted by Cal LAFCO's executive director, Bill Chiat. And when he was presenting what LAFCO's responsibilities are in a community, and there's basically a LAFCO in every county except, I think, San Francisco. And one of the questions I posed to Mr. Chiat during that meeting was, what oversight does a citizen have? What oversight do they have over LAFCO? And he basically said that the only oversight a citizen has over LAFCO is the court system. And in other words, if violations of the Brown Act, you've got to go to court. And he also mentioned that, boldly, that LAFCO never loses in court. Well, my experience with that here in San Luis Obispo County, that's true. You'll never get to court. You'll never even get to trial. I had filed a lawsuit against a special district here in San Luis Obispo on Brown Act violations and was fined for bringing up Brown Act violations more than once on my second amended complaint. That is a serious problem. When the violations are presented to the district attorney of this county is already through several examples in Los Altos and Morro Bay and Cayucas, refuses to look at criminal violations for Brown Act violations, and he chooses not to enforce it. This leaves the citizens in a conundrum, or it's like being in a carny game. In other words, it's a shell game that's played out, and we as citizens really don't have any options. So what I would like to also add, and there's several people speaking on Los Osos, here in Morro Bay, I had written several reports that showed that the dilapidated state of the collection system in Morro Bay and Cayucas. In fact, in your district, in fact, where you live, Mr. Gibson, in Cayucas, in 2003, the December San Simeon earthquake, me and a co-worker were able to secure about $1 million in FEMA funding for the damage just to the collection system. And now, Morro Bay, after 7 years, is still talking about how we're going to solve the problem of our upgrading our wastewater treatment plant. A wastewater treatment plant is in serious state. So what we need is a collaborative effort here. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir. My last request is Mr. Wynn.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from Napomo. I want to talk to you just a little bit today about the current situation with the Paso Robles groundwater basin and the work that's being done to come up with some solutions for that. There's a lot of stakeholders. We have very limited resources with water in the area, and it seems to me that we're starting to get a little tired. When you get tired, sometimes you throw in the towel when you need to bear down and get to where we need to get. I'm hearing a little bit of sort of demonizing of agriculture, not by farmers, mind you, but by everybody who eats their produce, saying they're wasting water. There's some play with the notion that we would just adopt the no project option under CEQA for this and just let the situation sort of go by benign neglect, and then it could be litigated. And it sounds attractive that litigation would simply force everybody to sit down at the same table. The judge would listen to everybody. He'd sort out who's right and who's wrong, and then he would drop the hammer on a decision, and we'd all live with it. I want to share with you that that's not what's happened with us in the Santa Maria groundwater basin, and I suggest that it wouldn't happen quite that conveniently in Paso Robles Basin either. After my community, which is a small community, has spent $5 million, the city of Santa Maria has spent well over $12 million, and all parties together have spent close to $25 million over 12 years, we're still in appeal. And we have a decision, but it has not caused everybody to love each other or to get along or to follow by the same rules. If you go down that road, and I'm urging you not to, you might end up with the same sort of results, which are farms would be exempt, single families on RR and RLN would be exempt, mutual water companies would be exempt. And so the cities, the county, and the CSDs would end up paying for the solutions. I think I urge you to keep working on a more productive track. Try to find something voluntarily that all the stakeholders can work on. You'll save time. You'll save money. You'll save the communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. With that, we'll move into the board business. Madam Clerk, if you can introduce the first item, please.
Item C1, a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the addition of delinquent service charges for County Service Area Number 16, Shandon Water Service, and County Service Area 10A, Cayucas Water Services, to the 2010-2011 property tax bills, first and second districts. It's recommended approval.
Thank you. Ms. Brunick.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick, the County Public Works Department.
Speaker on?
Is it?
Far left, yellow light.
God.
Okay, you're good then.
Okay. This is the routine annual process to place county service area delinquent service charges on the tax roll. The Public Works Department is recommending that your board adopt a resolution which authorizes these various delinquent county service area water service charges to be collected on the tax roll. These delinquencies represent less than 0.5% of the total annual water revenues for the following county service areas: CSA 16-1, Shandon area, CSA 10A, Cayucas. The property owners subject to this collection method were notified by mail on May 25, 2010, and were given the opportunity to pay the amount owed. All the required notices have been met through the Tribune, and this concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions from the board? I see none. I have no request to speak. I'll bring it back to the board.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second. Been moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Astajian to go with staff's recommendation and adopt the resolution and direct the clerk to file a copy of the approved resolution. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Astajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Our next item, please.
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider a protest by Pacific West Energy Solutions Incorporated regarding the county's selection of Electricraft Incorporated to perform retrofit lighting and heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in the county buildings and facilities as an energy service company through the request for quote request for proposal process. Item was continued from June 8, 2010, and it's recommended denial of the protest.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. For the record, this is a continued protest hearing, and the format for this hearing will be as follows. Our county staff will make a 10-minute presentation. Pacific Energy will have 10 minutes to make their presentation. Electricraft, 10 minutes for theirs. Then I'll open it for public comment and board questions. Then you'll each have 3 minutes for your closing comments if you so choose. And then the board will finalize their deliberations and come to conclusion with this. Is that correct? Thank you.
Very good.
Ms. Pell.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Jeanette Pell, the General Services Agency Director, and today's hearing is a continuation of the May 18th protest hearing by Pacific West regarding the pending selection of Electrocraft to retrofit lighting and heating and ventilation and air conditioning in county buildings and facilities. Today I will provide background regarding the project, the protest, county staff's analysis of information gathered, our conclusions, and make a recommendation to your board. The vendors will be provided time to make a statement regarding their position. As background, the county has been preparing for the retrofit of our county's buildings and facilities for over a year. On June 9, 2009, your board approved the resolution to apply for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to the United States Department of Energy. The Department of Energy grant was awarded October 19, 2009, to be used by the General Services Agency to retrofit lighting and heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in county buildings. On January 20, 2010, the county issued a request for qualification and request for proposal with the goal of placing contractors on the county's energy services company list, which is referred to as an ESCO, and obtaining proposals to complete the energy efficiency and conservation work funded by the Department of Energy grant. Proposals were due February 19, 2009. The county received five proposals and, based on the Public Utilities Code, qualified and placed all five proposers on the county's qualified ESCO list. Additionally, the selection committee evaluated the proposals and ranked Electrocraft as number one proposer and Pacific West as the number two proposer. Electrocraft was ranked number one based on their ability to best meet the county's needs. On March 31, 2010, the county received notification from the Department of Energy that Electrocraft was qualified to perform the work required in the grant that included heating, ventilation, and air conditioning and electrical work. The county began contract negotiations with Electrocraft. Throughout the process, the county staff carefully followed all purchasing procedures. On March 10, 2010, Pacific West was notified they were ranked number two. They filed their protest on March 12. The first protest hearing was held on March 22, 2010, with Helen McCann, Department Administrator, and Shannon Matyshevitz, Deputy County Counsel. Many items were clarified, but the conclusion this team came to was to deny the protest. The second protest hearing was held on April 7, 2010, with Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel, Ben Farrington, IT Supervisor, and me, the General Services Agency Director. After receiving information provided by Pacific West, the team also denied the protest. On May 18, 2010, Pacific West presented their position to the board. The hearing was continued to today. Pacific West is protesting two issues. The first is licensing requirements. Pacific West contends that Electrocraft is not properly licensed to do the work requested in the request for qualification, request for proposal. At the hearing on May 18th, the protester, Pacific West, contended that the county should not award Electrocraft a contract because they lack the required licenses to perform a majority of the work. Under California state law, a primary contractor must be licensed to perform the majority of the project. The county believes Electrocraft has the proper state licenses to work for the county. I will go into more detail on this point in a moment. The second issue relates to the ESCO qualifications. Pacific West contends that Electrocraft is not qualified to be an ESCO. Based on California Public Utilities Code, the county determined that we have the authority to create a county list of qualified ESCOs to perform any and all energy projects within the county without performing another request for qualification process. This list is valid for 3 years. Further, we have determined that Electrocraft met the criteria as set out in the Public Utilities Code. Throughout the process, county staff followed all protest procedures fully. County staff evaluated information provided by Pacific West and Electrocraft. Additionally, 7 independent subject matter experts were asked to use their best judgment, experience, and industry best practices to assign a magnitude of cost to each project. 70% of the respondents determined the majority of the work was electrical, and 30% of the respondents determined the majority of the work was mechanical. Based on the information provided, county staff believes that a valid argument can be made that the majority of the work to be performed is electrical and therefore is consistent with the Business and Professions Code. Despite the fact that a case can be made, the information received is not definite and results varied significantly. Staff believes it is in the best interest of the county to secure the grant funding and proceed with the projects. Any continuation of this dispute and protest will delay implementation of the projects and could jeopardize the energy savings that can be achieved through the use of these grant funds. After thorough analysis, county staff has concluded that it is in the best interest of the county to reject all proposals. By rejecting the proposals, your board will clear the way for staff to research alternatives available to the county. County staff will identify the option or options that will maximize the value for the dollar, complete energy conservation projects within the time frame prescribed by the grant, and begin reducing energy use at specified county facilities, which will decrease greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible. The request for proposal clearly states the county reserves the option to reject any or all proposals, wholly or in part, received by reason of this request. There are several ways to proceed with the work described in the county's grant application to the Department of Energy to retrofit lighting and heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in county buildings. If directed by your board, staff will evaluate all choices available to us and pursue the option or combination of options that maximizes the value for the dollar and meets the requirements of the grant. Options under consideration include county staff performing the energy audits, county staff managing the retrofit work, contracting with an outside certified energy manager to perform the energy audits, county job order contractor performing the retrofit work, and or contracting with qualified electrical and heating, ventilation, and air conditioning contractors to perform the retrofit work by organizing the work into discrete projects based on the detail from the energy audits. The request for qualifications, request for proposal, combine the work to realize efficiencies, but in order to meet grant deadlines, county staff believes it is in the best interest of the county to proceed with an approach that organizes the work into individual projects. By rejecting all proposals, the protest by Pacific West becomes moot. The documents and discussions presented by Pacific West in support of their protest have not definitively established a right to the award of the contract. From a review of all the documentation and after taking into account the information Pacific West provided, staff has determined that the county has the authority to qualify and did qualify 5 firms as an ESCO. Staff has determined that all 5 firms met the criteria set out in the Public Utilities Code. An investigation into the process revealed that the procedures were followed and the selection processes were valid. The county's written policies and procedures for requests for qualifications and requests for proposals were known to staff and followed in staff's activities. Every point of the protest was fully researched, county staff sought other opinions, and county council provided legal guidance. County staff urges the board to conclude the protest today by approving staff's recommendation. And here's the recommendation. Staff recommends that you reject all proposals, that you deny the protest by Pacific West as moot, instruct staff to further evaluate options, find that the request for qualification and request for proposal process was properly followed, and find that the county had the authority to qualify ESCOs and did properly do so. And that concludes my presentation.
Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pell, the question, it's been somewhat of a long, drawn-out process, and so I think the obvious question that people arrive at is why the recommended course of action today, which would reject all the proposals, and why wasn't that looked at, I guess, at the beginning or earlier on in terms of the direction that you're suggesting today?
You know, we continued to gather information and reviewed many options, and I think we finally determined there were like six or seven different options and evaluated the pros and cons of each. We likely should have done that at the first step when the protest was brought forward, but we felt that Electrocraft definitely met the qualifications that set out in the request for qualifications and the proposal.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pell, I wonder if you could explain to me what the significance of qualifying an entity as an ESCO is. What does that confer special status in some way? It seems to have caused a considerable amount of confusion. Seems to be about half of the issue under protest at this point. California statute defines our ability to qualify ESCOs. If you get to be an ESCO, what's that buy you?
I believe, and again, this is I've learned a lot about what an ESCO is in the last few months, but it was a way to streamline our project so that we didn't have to go out and get energy. Actually, I'm not exactly sure. I'll refer this to Rita.
Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. Under the Public Utilities Code, an entity can qualify ESCOs, get a list of qualified ESCOs. So each and every time they have an energy savings project, if they choose, they can choose one of the vendors off of that list without having to redo the request for qualification process each and every time. So it gives them an option to use the list, but they also don't have to use the list. They can, you know, go through other options. So it's a way to streamline the process if a government entity decides to do that.
I mean, energy saving is not rocket science. It involves efficiencies in the use of gas and the use of electricity and the use of air conditioning space. And so is it the position of General Services and Council that our job order contracting provides us with a suitable selection of properly qualified entities to conduct basically the same services that were requested of an ESCO?
They're a little bit two separate things. The Public Utilities Code sets out qualifications to become an ESCO. But energy savings projects in and of themselves do not require that you use ESCOs. Okay. So having an ESCO list is one way to streamline your projects, but job order contracting is another way to streamline projects, not only energy savings projects, but any type of maintenance project. So I hope I answered your question, that they are two different things. But the list that General Services created has five companies on it right now. And they certainly could use that list for different types of energy savings contracts.
Okay, thank you.
What measures, I guess, are we going to be able to put in place so that we're not confronted with this situation again in terms of whatever direction the board decides to go with this? I mean, obviously, we've had some issues with this whole process. What are we going to be able to do to eliminate that concern as we go forward?
So we've spent quite a bit of time discussing that, Supervisor Meacham. I believe we would separate the request for qualification and the request for proposal into two separate projects or processes. And additionally, we would be clearer in what we were looking for as far as a general contractor. So those are probably our two takeaways. Again, we don't often, this is probably, well, it's definitely the first protest I've ever participated in, and they're not common for the county, and I think it's indicative to the economy and, you know, people wanting a fair shake at all the work. So.
I'm going to go to ask County Council, do I need to have anybody sworn in at this point that maybe had not been sworn in before?
The only... Sorry, Rita Neal. The only reason you would have people sworn in is if anybody was going to testify today. My understanding is that both the lawyers are planning on providing information to the board, but it's not going to be in the way
of... So there's no other testimony that's necessary then?
No, unless one of the parties tells us they're going to have some testimony.
We do have a contractor, a local contract here to discuss the scope of work involved in the HVAC contract, so to the extent that he needs to be sworn in.
Okay, we'll probably need to have him sworn in. If you please stand and be sworn in for the record, please, and the county clerk will...
Solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name, please.
Jason DeVries.
Thank you.
You're now married. Okay, with that, we're going to move over to Pacific West. Gentlemen, you have 10 minutes, if you would, please.
Thank you, sir, and if I call you your honor again, I apologize beforehand.
I kind of like it, that's fine.
Chairman, Supervisor of the Board, I'm Phil Wong. I represent Pacific West Energy Solutions as part of the continuation of our protest as far back as May 18th. We are continuing in this protest not because of the economy, but we do want a fair shake in front of the board, and that's why we're here. It is not because we want to boggle the process down of the county or... We are insisting on getting the entire project. In fact, we have been working very hard with county staff to find a mutually acceptable solution. And in fact, during the continuance process, the county staff had asked for a continuance so they could prepare the numbers and to agree to a tentative settlement with us. We had agreed to that settlement to try to split up the scope of work. And in fact, Electrocraft had rejected that proposal, and that's why we are here today. We are continuing this protest because there is continued perceived perception of unfairness, and we have been continuing to work with good faith with the county staff to reach a solution. So I want to be clear, we are not here just because we want to protest or that we are here insisting that we must get the entire scope of work before we will go away. That is not the point. We are here because we think the process was unfair. We believe that the process that was done does not comply with California law. And so we want a fair shake in front of the county, and that is what we're asking for. We are not insisting that we get the entire scope of work just because we lost. We are coming over here crying over spilled milk. So I want to be clear on that. And I do want to bring a little bit of history in front of the board. You will recall in the May 18th hearing, we had brought this protest up about the scope of work between the HVAC portion and electrical. They had presented a pie chart which completely contradicted the original scope of work provided by the county. The original scope of work was 65% HVAC work, 35% electrical. And the pie chart that was presented was completely upside down, and it presented, in fact, something roughly to the effect of 60% electrical work and HVAC, 40% HVAC work. And at that hearing, I strongly protested, indicating that this was an ex post facto justification of the way they wanted to award the contract. You'll see that there's no pie chart presented here. They have withdrawn them. And in fact, shortly before this hearing, we also reached out to Electrocraft to see if we can figure out a mutually acceptable solution. I did not get a call back. There have been many issues raised by the letters, including my letter and the letter by Electrocraft. But I think the issue really boils down, they're actually quite narrow. There are quite a few legal issues raised, but I think it's quite narrow. We both agree that Business and Professions Code 7059B applies, which says that the majority of the general contractor must have the license required to do the majority of the work. So simply stated, the issue in dispute, the legal issue in dispute, is what is the percentage of work between the HVAC and electrical work. It's also undisputed that Electrocraft has an electrical license but does not have an HVAC license, whereas Pacific West does. There's also no dispute that the original engineer's estimate provided that there was the scope of work to be 65% HVAC, 35% electrical. Now, that did include materials costs, but at the May 18th protest, that was the only data we had, and that was the basis for our protest. At that hearing, the board requested that staff provide more detailed breakdowns of the labor cost and material cost. They didn't do that. Instead, what they did was they asked us to provide those estimates, and they are in front of the board, I believe. So at the end of the day, the real dispute boils down to the spreadsheets that you have been presented. One is the corrugated agenda item C2, under C2. One is page 20 of the original submission to the board. And before I move on to specifics in those spreadsheets, let me say one thing about the ESCO process. Supervisor Gibson, you had asked the question about what does it mean to be an ESCO. And the difficulty in our protest about the ESCOs is that we had asked the county for Electrocraft's bid in order to evaluate what was the process followed in evaluating an ESCO. That request was rejected. We didn't have access to the bid, so we don't know Electrocraft's qualifications as an ESCO. But it is important to note that even as the county council indicated, that there is a list. A list is generated from an ESCO in which it goes out to bid. So there's a timing process. First you generate the list, then you go out to the RFP process. That was not followed here. What happened here was there were an RFP and RFQ issued calling for ESCOs. And as a result of that RFP calling for ESCOs, many general contractors who know they don't qualify as an ESCO did not apply for this bid. And so the county staff, after getting bids, then post hoc, after the fact, qualified Electrocraft as an ESCO. We've never seen that happen before. And so that is the basis of our protest. I won't dwell on that anymore, but the point is we do think that is a significant issue. We just do not have the facts sufficient to say more about that. And let's move on to the spreadsheets. I would like to point out several issues with Electrocraft spreadsheet, and I'm looking at page 20 of the agenda. If you look at line item 1, it's lighting exterior. And Electrocraft estimates that the labor cost for the electrical work is $100,000. We've done a count during the walkthrough how many fixtures there are. There's 229 fixtures. So if you divide that by 100,000 by 229 fixtures, we're talking about $437 to change one light bulb. And if you break that down based on the $81 an hour labor estimate that Electrocraft provided, that's 5.4 hours per light bulb. I get a lot of jokes as a lawyer about how many lawyers it takes to change a light bulb. 5.4 hours per licensed contractor to change a light bulb, I think it doesn't seem to add up. Line number 3. On the cracked computer room air conditioning unit, Electrocraft estimates that it takes $3,500 in HVAC labor to change 4 10-ton units of HVAC units. However, if you look at the bottom, the HVAC labor estimates based on page 20, they estimate that each unit will cost $2,400 to change. So the $3,500 simply doesn't add up. I'm only going through this from a highlight level because I know I only have 10 minutes. But if you look at the electrical labor estimates for HVAC on the right-hand side of the page, they estimate it takes 16 hours of electrical work to disconnect and reconnect an HVAC unit. We believe that is wildly inconsistent with what actually happens. We think a reasonable estimate is 2-3 hours for the electrical part of the HVAC unit. I have Jason here from One Hour Heating. He's a local contractor. And the reason I brought him here is to explain as what an HVAC contractor does in replacing an HVAC unit. The level, the detailed steps of what they need to do as opposed to an electrical contractor. So Jason, if you would speak to the board.
Good morning. As we've stated before, as I've stated, Jason DeVries, president of One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning out of Atascadero. We've been in business for about 28 years now and are a C20 licensed contractor under the state of California. Generally out in the field, what we run into is proper unit sizing options and specifications, duct work, duct transitions, sizing again, installation, and unit disconnection and reconnecting, crane and rigging, unit recycling and disposal of refrigeration with EPA certifications, roof curbs, sheetings and flashings, dealing with economizers to maximize outdoor air at proper ambient temperatures, air testing and balancing to assure proper airflow, refrigerant pressure and testing, plumbing in terms of condensate and natural gas or propane, and startup testing and evaluation and ongoing warranty support.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Jason. I realize that I am out of time, but suffice to say that we believe the HVAC scope of work and the electrical scope of work is wildly out of line in Electrocraft's estimates, and ours are consistent with, and we use local contractors in submitting our estimates. I realize that I am out of time, but we would reiterate that we like to urge the board to carefully consider the numbers that are presented. We have not been presented, by the way, by the seven experts. Who are they? I don't know what this is the first time I've heard of it. We've never heard of who they are. We'd like to know who they are and what is the expert opinion that they have provided. And finally, to illustrate what we believe is that their numbers are out of sync, one way I think the board can save the county a lot of money is to award the electrical part to Pacific West and the HVAC part to Electrocraft, that we both have to live with our estimates. I think that might be a way to save the county a lot of money, but I think what really is at the heart of the matter is if you really believe in those estimates, you should be able to live by them.
Thank you. We're going to go to Electrocraft.
Yeah.
Good morning, Honorable Board. My name is Trevin Tilbury. I'm from the Downey Brand Firm in Sacramento. I represent Electrocraft in this matter. I apologize that we weren't able to attend the first meeting on this matter because it wasn't yet brought to our attention, but I'm going to try to summarize some of the issues that you're faced with and that you've been faced with, and specifically try to address some of the assertions and allegations made by Pacific West this morning. Excuse me, I woke up with a little bit of a cough this morning, so I apologize for that. I want to address a couple of things that Pacific West said during their presentation moments ago, one of which was that they believe the process has been unfair and somehow unjust. Because I didn't attend the last meeting, I did come to the website and I reviewed the hearing, and I recall specifically, in fact, a great deal of discussion by Pacific West explaining how professional the process had been and laying great praise, frankly, on county staff about how this process had been handled thus far. And so I think it's telling that after the first hearing, their position has now changed before you today. Mr. Wong also said that there was a proposal that was made and rejected by Electrocraft. There may be something caught up in translation or in miscommunication because no proposal has ever been made to Electrocraft. What I have heard and what my client has heard is simply that there was a suggestion that, hey, maybe we can try to split this work up somehow and then have the county sign off and approve it. I've never seen a specific proposal, and as a colleague of mine likes to say, the devil is in the details about how that work would specifically be split up. But I think the more important point is I'm not sure how the county could take two of five approved ESCO contractors, let them make a side deal, and then somehow approve that and say that's fine without running afoul of the other folks who were identified as ESCO contractors. So I think that's something to consider. There's been a great deal of discussion about this pie chart and the scope of work and what is HVAC work versus what is electrical work. And one of the our letter, which essentially was our attempt to address the issues raised at the first meeting begins at page 7 of the agenda item, and I encourage you all to look at it, although I think staff has reviewed and summarized, and council has reviewed and summarized well for you. But I think one of the problems with this project that's caused a bit of confusion is it's not like a typical traditional construction project where a particular scope of work is set forth, bids come in, and the work is performed. Part of this project is to do the energy audit and to determine specifically what work is to be performed. There were estimates, and there's some, I'd even go as far as to say they're guesstimates in the initial RFQ, RFP as to what work's performed, and that's what Pacific West's calculations are based on. And frankly, that's what the spreadsheets that Pacific West referred to are based on. They're based on, frankly, a skewed view of what is going to happen. They are assuming that all of the units on those structures are going to be replaced. And that's simply not likely to be the case. The more likely scenario is during the audit, some units will be found to be either inefficient or needing to be replaced, and some will not. You know, an HVAC equipment is very, very expensive, and it's one of the reasons that we address in our letter why we don't think the equipment, since it doesn't require a license, shouldn't be included in the Section 7059 analysis at all. But when you look at the HVAC equipment and the expense of that equipment, it significantly skews the numbers there. And really, when you're talking, this is a licensing issue. 7059 is concerned with licensing. And when you're dealing with licensing, you're not dealing with dollar value or cost of the work. You're dealing with the skill involved. And the reason we require licenses is so contractors have the requisite skill to do a good job, and so the public gets their money's worth. So because the scope of work is not set in stone, everything we're looking at and everything the board has been presented thus far is assuming that all of these HVAC units will be replaced. And so that skews this entire analysis significantly against my client because it maximizes the amount of possible HVAC work on this project. Another point I want to make is within the term HVAC work has been thrown around a fair bit. And the question is, what is and is not HVAC work? Installing, you know, let's assume that an HVAC unit's going to be replaced, and that's the best use of the grant funds. Taking that HVAC unit off and putting it back involves a significant amount of electrical work. It's not just plugging it in like a light socket. You have to run the requisite conduits, make sure you have the power lines in place, and some of those may be able to be used from the old units, but also there's circuit breaker work to use. If you're going to be moving down the scale on required amperage and things like that, you're going to need different breakers or else you're going to risk burning out those systems for some reason if there's a problem with the HVAC unit. So it's more complicated than just plugging in at a light socket. In fact, it involves a fair amount of electrical work to install and remove an HVAC unit. So within this HVAC work description, I think it's important for the board to understand there's a significant amount of electrical work. Pacific West Council made a point during his presentation that based on the numbers that there was $500-some-odd to change a light bulb. I've changed lots of light bulbs in my house, but I haven't changed many light fixtures. There's a difference. These can lights are light fixtures. Significant amount more work involved in changing a light fixture, changing out the ballast, changing out and making sure the wiring is correct, and then simply changing a light bulb. It's not that simple. And I think Pacific West is doing a disservice in not being accurate about that statement. The bottom line that Electrocraft wants to get across here is that the majority of this project is electrical. And it's not just Electrocraft's spreadsheet. County staff made that determination early on at the first meeting. They've gone out and gotten independent determinations by 5 different independent contractors who have no, to use a colloquialism, dog in the fight. And 70% of those folks came back and said this is a majority electrical contract. So this is not some fantasy of Electrograph. This is a majority electrical contract. It's backed up by the facts and backed up by the research and professionalism of county staff. I want to jump real quick to the question of the materials cost, and that was an issue that got raised at the first meeting. We don't believe that it makes sense to include the materials cost in the analysis of whether, under Section 7059, as to whether the majority of the product is electrical or something else. And the reason for that is, first of all, we're dealing with a question about whether a license is required. There's no license required to purchase electrical equipment at all. In fact, I suspect the county on prior jobs has probably purchased its own equipment and had someone install it for them. The concern of the license statute, again, is about the skill of installing that equipment. It's about making sure that equipment is installed properly. It's not a requirement to have a license to purchase the electrical equipment or the HVAC equipment itself. The other thing I think that's important to remember is that by including the material, it skews the numbers, again, in favor of Pacific West. And the reason it does that is because HVAC equipment tends to be expensive, and it tends to be larger pieces of equipment than a single circuit or switch or a light ballast. And so by including the materials, it heavily skews the numbers in favor of Pacific West. And so I think the board, in making its decision, should adjust and correct for that skew. That problem is compounded even further when you take into account the point I made earlier, which is that not all of these units are going to be replaced. The audit is very likely to show that the units will not need to be replaced, and that the best bang for the buck for the county is to either adjust the controls on those units or other things. So when you're looking at a very expensive piece of HVAC equipment, and you look at the assumptions that are made that underlie a lot of the analysis that's been done thus far, is to assume that all of those expensive pieces of equipment are going to be replaced when that's not necessarily the case. Again, there's a skew in favor of the numbers. The last point I just want to make quickly, and I see that my time is expiring, is that if the county and if the board, I think based on the information that you have in front of you, there are two permissible options. One is to award the contract to Electrograph as it was originally intended and as the staff originally recommended. I think the only other legally permissible option is to do as the staff has recommended in this instance, although we do think the Electrograph is entitled to this job and should get the job, that the only other legally permissible thing is that it's fairly clear-cut that both under the RFP, RFQ, and under state law, that you can reject all bids and proceed as county staff has suggested. Happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay, we'll get to that in a moment. Thank you very much. At this point, public comment, I have no request to speak from the public, so we're going to come back to the board with questions. How many questions from the board? Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pell, some of the comments we've heard in the last 20 minutes have suggested that the specific tasks to be executed in this energy retrofit have not yet been determined. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that depends on the results of an energy audit?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Neal, one of the assertions by Pacific West is that we're not complying with California law, and I wonder if you could just answer that so that we, or Mr. McNulty perhaps, whichever of our wise county councils would like to.
Chairman Meacham and Supervisor Hill, for the purposes of this hearing, I'm here to advise the board, and Ms. Neal is going to be advising the Department of General Services. I've reviewed the letter from Pacific West, and I disagree with its conclusion that we violated the law here. I think the recommendation that has been prepared by General Services staff for today's hearing is an appropriate one. If the board chooses to follow that, I think you will be in compliance with the law.
Okay. Thank you.
Not yet.
Ms.
just want to make a couple of comments that, you know, what I've heard from both sides about questioning one another's ability to determine whether, in fact, the numbers are correct relative to the tasks being attempted here. And Electrocraft's representative is correct in regarding the issue of the wiring of a HVAC unit. If in fact you do have to reduce the size of that wiring, for example, and if you have a commercial type panel which is requiring a bolt-on breaker, it takes a little bit longer time to remove that as opposed to just a snap-in type breaker. And you may have to re-pull wire. I don't know that. I don't know what the size of the AC units are based upon what their investigation was. And also in regard to lighting fixtures, they're absolutely correct. Any type of a commercial type application is much more difficult than it is from a residential standpoint. And changing a fixture is much more involved than just changing the light bulb. If you have to change the ballast, you have to remove the interior out of that and then replace that. If you're in an area where you have to bring in a lift, for example, into here to go to each and every one, that takes additional time as well. So I think that our comments relative to what each other is capable of doing and the requirements necessary to accomplish that, I'd have to leave that to the professionals that do this sort of work, but I did this sort of work for 20 years, so I understand exactly what's involved in the wiring and the disconnect and the reconnect of air conditioning units, as well as working on panels and these sorts of things. So with that, I'm going to allow 3 minutes closing comments from Pacific West and also then Electrocraft.
Sure. Yes, thank you, Chairman. And perhaps I may have overstated my case. I don't mean to suggest that fixing a fixture is simply just as much as screwing it on or screwing it off. But what I am trying to say, though, is 5.5 hours even to change a ballast, go on the lift, is excessive. Our estimate is roughly 2.5 hours for each fixture. 5.5 is, we think, it's beyond what is reasonable. As for the HVAC work, Jason, could you speak to that, please?
Yeah, in terms of being involved with projects very similar to this in the past or likewise, the electrical portions have been a small amount of what we have came against in terms of the whole scope of work. So,
and Jason, have you ever seen an electrical contractor awarded HVAC scope of work in this manner?
No, never.
And I would like to clear up something. Yes, I believe the county staff has been professional. Our dealings with them have been very pleasant and professional. I do not dispute that at all. We do perceive unfairness. We do believe that the decision was wrong. That said, I believe as a lawyer that we can have civil disagreements and vigorous disagreements without being unprofessional. So I don't perceive what I said in the May 18th hearing and in my hearing today as being inconsistent. Also, one of the statements that Electrocraft has made is that there's going to be an energy audit. There's not clear that every piece of HVAC unit will be changed. That is correct, but it does present a problem of how to look at how to comply with 7059 from a prospective aspect. If the entire scope of work includes these, then this is what you have to look at. Otherwise, it's a shifting target. There's no other way of looking at it. I have no other comments, but I would appreciate the board's time, and we would urge the board to find in our favor.
Thank you, sir. And with that, I'll go to Electrocraft for a 3-minute closing.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess I would close with just one comment, and I apologize for not catching the witness's name. I should have written that down. But the witness testified and talked about a long list of things that were involved in changing out an HVAC unit. Among those, one of the ones that just happened to jump to my mind, or actually two of them, were crane and rigging and flashing, and that those were things that were typically involved in changing out an HVAC unit. And neither of those require an HVAC license. And neither of those require an electrical license. And so I think that just further demonstrates and underscores the complexity and the difficulty of simply slapping a label like HVAC work on changing out HVAC units and then leaving it at that. I think it's a much more complicated and nuanced approach, and I think the board would be well suited to listen to the advice of the independent folks that the staff has approached and obtained information from, and the vast majority of those independent people agree that it was primarily an electrical contract. That said, the only thing the board could do that would be the incorrect and would be, I think, legally invalid approach would be to award the contract to Pacific West. I think the backup position in our view would be to reject all bids and proceed as the staff has recommended. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ron. Just one more thing I forgot. If the board does decide, we would ask that the board make a finding of fact that indeed there is majority of electrical work that complies with 759. That said, we understand that rejecting all bids is also on the table.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to go back to county staff for closing comments.
Thank you. I do have some closing comments coming up. There it is. Okay. From staff's point of view, it is critical that we resolve this protest today. County staff urges the board to conclude the protest today by approving staff's recommendations. By rejecting the proposals, your board will clear the way for staff to research the alternatives available to the county. County staff will identify all the options that are available to us to minimize the value, to maximize the value of the dollar, complete our energy conservation projects as outlined in the grant, and also to begin reducing energy use at specified county facilities, which will also begin to decrease greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible. So we need to get moving on this work. It is in staff's belief that it's in the best interest of the county to secure the grant funding and proceed with the projects. Any continuation of this dispute and protest will delay implementation of these projects and could jeopardize our funding. So it is staff's recommendation, again, you've seen this earlier, that you reject all proposals, that you deny the protest by Pacific West, you instruct staff to further evaluate the options available to us, find that the RFP process was properly followed by county staff, and find that the county had the authority to qualify ESCOs and did properly do so.
Okay. Gentlemen. Are there questions, comments?
Question,
Mr. Gibson.
Question, Mr. Chairman, of Ms. Pell. If we were to consider going with staff's recommendation today, I'm very concerned about the time frame. Could you give us exactly, first of all, what's our drop dead on having to have these projects complete?
We have to have them completed in October of 2012.
Okay. And one of staff's requests is for direction to go research other options. How long is that going to take?
What we'll do first is actually perform the energy audits, and I believe that we have a couple of options already identified, and I believe we could start that almost immediately.
Okay, so the energy audit could be started within a week, maybe?
Correct.
Okay. Once that energy audit is done, do we then end up with a definitive scope of work for those things that need to be done
yes.
in response?
Yes, that's
so we
correct.
Will have exact projects down to the number of light bulbs
yes.
at the point of the energy audit?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I ask a follow-up to that?
Yeah.
Is there a time frame in which this has to be completed?
All work has to be completed by October 2012.
Okay, so
and we have 18 buildings that need some retrofit.
But is your plan to seek individual projects and contracts on individual projects, or how are we going to proceed if we go with your recommendation.
Yes. Once we complete the energy audit, then we will scope the work in the individual projects and proceed that way.
I'm just tempted to get Mr. Chairman a tool belt and a lift and get him going on this right now.
Well, looking at the rates that these guys are charging, I should have taken a lift. Mr. Hill?
I'll defer to Mr. Sagner.
Mr. Sagner.
Questions for...
thank you, Mr. Hill. My understanding that after you do your homework, that we're looking at two different proposals, one for electrical one and another one for the HVAC. Am I correct by saying that? Because when you said that we'll be coming back and dealing with each project, but I thought regardless of each project, it's two pieces. One deals with HVAC and one deals with electrical. Are we going to look at two different proposals for two different ways of dealing with a given project for all those 18 locations?
We'll be looking for qualified contractors to perform the scope of work. So, we won't separate it by electrical and HVAC. It'll be by project.
Thank you. And the ESCO issue, that still be a requirement based upon the county doing what they're doing?
No.
Okay. Mr. Hill, do you have a comment or question?
If there's no further questions, I guess I'm ready to make a motion. And I certainly apologize if either of the companies perceived the process to be unfair. I think it's pretty clear that that wasn't intentional on the county's part. But I do think that we need to move forward, and therefore I would move that we go forward with staff's recommendation to deny the protest by Pacific West and find the RFQ and RFP process was properly followed. The county has the authority to qualify ESCOs and did properly qualify five, reject all the proposals, and instruct staff to further evaluate the options.
Second that motion. I would ask to include in our the recommendations that we seek some type of a process by which we won't have to be confronted with this again. And I too, echo Supervisor Hill's comments. It's unfortunate that we've come to this point, but I do think that we did follow everything the way we were supposed to, and it's just we were just caught in an unusual situation here. Mr. Gibson, did you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking to the motion, which I will support, I think it's important to observe that there's no perfect solution here. There may not even be a highly satisfactory solution or one satisfactory to all parties here, and it occurs to me that's a combination of factors. I would hope that they were avoidable, but I'm not sure. We're wading into new territory here with energy retrofits. We are hampered by vagueness in the business and professional code, and appreciate individuals and our independent experts trying to break down electrical versus HVAC, but the reality is that business and professional code allows us a wide discretion and a wide range of interpretations, and I don't think the details here are going to save us, not least of which is we don't have a specified scope of work. All of that comes out of an RFQ, RFP process that is imperfect, at least. Part of it might have been that it was ambitious. Part of it was that the wording could have been better than it was. I don't think there's a great solution here, but out of those available to us, staff's recommendation seems as good as we're going to get.
With that, I'll call the question. Madam Clerk?
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Let's move into the final item for the day. Madam Clerk?
The next item is D1, a status report on the Willow Road Interchange Project and Funding Alternatives, 4th District.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, Honorable Board. Today I'm here with Will Clemens, our Chief Financial Officer for the Department, and the Willow Road Project Manager, Dale Ramey. We're here to provide an update on the Willow Road Interchange Project, and in particular the funding necessary to move to the next phase of the project, which is project construction. We'll start our slideshow. If we could go to the next slide. So the overall project for Willow Road has been a project that's been in the general plan since the early 1980s. The objective is to create another east-west route for Napomo, which is desperately needed by the congestion we see at Test Street Interchange. This also provides a significant route over to the Route 1 corridor, as well as commercial service and agricultural uses that exist on the west side of the Napomo Mesa, and would create that alternate route that, again, is currently congesting Test Street, as well as the fringe roads of Los Barrios Road and Orchard. The project has been in development since the late 1980s. In 1999, the board established the alignment for this road under a Tier 1 environmental impact report. 10 years later, on March 2009, your board adopted a final environmental impact report approving this alignment as shown. This is a simulation of what this road will look like in the future as it connects across, moving from the west to the east, going as an undercrossing underneath the freeway with 101, and then connecting at its eastern point with Thompson Avenue. Willow Road has seen a lot of progress, particularly over the last couple of years. First off, phase one that we'll look at shortly is in construction. We have recently, this past spring, received all the Caltrans approvals necessary to proceed with the interchange. Your board has taken action on the necessary right-of-way to proceed with this project, and that is being obtained. We have received additional outside funding through both state grants and the ARRA project funding that existed last year. And most recently, at the end of June, we did receive the State Transportation Improvement Program monies, which is part of the interchange construction. Now, phase one is in construction and is being built by Romina Construction of Atascadero. Goes from essentially Black Lake at the west end over to Hedrick Road. This is kind of going through heavily residential areas and was taken out as a phase because of the detailed work to make street and driveway connections. The awarded contract was approximately $3.5 million, but in total, with construction support and mitigation costs, we have $5.2 million budgeted in the current budget to proceed with this work. Work began the end of last month, and we expect it to be completed in April of next year. For phase two, which is the remainder of the project. Again, we've had the Caltrans approve the projects, and then the California Transportation Commission at the end of June allocated the $10 million in STIP funds and $1 million in state-local partnership funds. There is one significant requirement with these funds, that the county would need to award a contract by the end of this calendar year in order to have those program monies authorized for this project. So when we look at phase two, we need to start looking at what we can afford and what we can pursue. We have broken that down into several elements, the first being the continuation of Willow Road to the east from Hedrick Avenue to Highway 101, then the connection with 101, and then an extension to the east to Thompson Avenue. Also in the plan was an extension of Frontage Road from the swap meet area up to the new road alignment. And then finally, under the environmental impact report, the project is to provide 22 acres of oak woodland habitat mitigation. We have evaluated those areas that are not as essential to the project and what we can pursue at this point. And again, the frontage road was something that we have essentially discontinued work on at this point, as we have not secured the right-of-way at this point. And construction costs for this leg
was beyond what we foresaw as revenues currently in hand. The other issue is whether or not Highway 101's Thompson segment should be continued at this point, given our financial situation. That, too, is looked at as a particular separate phase. So again, we show phase one here, and then we show phase two being divided into a phase 2A, which would connect to the interchange, and then a phase 2B, which would be an extension to Thompson. The frontage road is then shown as a phase three, which would essentially be done through development in the future. And in that process, we may find that development could provide a better alignment along the 101 corridor for that roadway. We have reviewed this with Caltrans staff. They have no problems looking at phase two as a proposed or a future project if the county is so constrained by finances. So a 2A and a 2B can be considered two separate projects. One element that under the EIR is necessary is to continue with the oak tree woodlands mitigation. This is being done in conjunction with the property that the county acquired across from the Dana Adobe in Napomo. This is owned by General Services, and we have a working agreement to plant 22 acres of oak woodland, which is shown in the blue areas on this map. The yellow areas are areas that the Land Conservancy has already pursued riparian habitat plantings. This would be a project that we would do simultaneous with the construction of any road work. In your board package today, we do highlight the significant issues, though, that need to be addressed by your board. Chief among them is we have insufficient funds to advertise all of Phase 2. We certainly want to present that Phase 3 is not fundable for the foreseeable future, and that to continue with project advertisement, we're really going to have to look at money management on the following items. First would be Proposition 1B Local Streets and Roads funds that your board has acted on previously that can be addressed or directed to this project. The second is Area 2 Road Impact Fee account, which serves the north area of the Napomo Mesa, and a potential loan from that source. Your board had taken previous action regarding that matter in January. A general fund loan, which essentially has been reserved for this project in previous funding cycles. And then the option of a local tax under 218 vote for a potential supplemental funding source. With that, I'll hand it over to Will to provide details on the financial options.
So going back several years, the project cost estimate in total was always about $42 million. Currently, the total project cost is $47 million, which is an increase of about $5 million. The details of why the cost estimates have increased, basically as we've acquired right-of-way, it's resulted in an additional $3 million to the project. And then some of those right-of-way changes required plan revisions to the tune of about $500,000. Also, utility relocations have increased the budget by $1.5 million. We've received some additional funding, as Dave mentioned, to help offset those increases, but not totally. We received $1.7 million in federal stimulus funds for the Phase 1. We've also received $2 million in Prop 1B state and local partnership program funds for the project. So what do we have left to spend? This slide shows that Phase 2A, which is the extension to 101 of Willow, along with the interchange, would require $26 million. And if we were to extend all the way over to Thompson, it would be another additional $4 million for a total left to spend of $30 million at current cost estimates. These are the committed funding sources for the project. As Dave mentioned, the STIP of $10 million. We have the Prop 1B state and local partnership of $1 million on phase two, in addition to the $1 million we received on phase one. Current road impact fees in the bank of about $2.2 million, and in August, we anticipate Woodlands with their annual payment of $2 million. So basically, by the time we would advertise, we'd have about $15.2 million in hand. Some previously approved actions by your board in January was mentioned. There was a $2 million loan from Area 2, which we'll discuss a little bit more in detail. $6 million was set aside in previous budget cycles in a reserve that could be used for a loan for Willow Road, $5.2 million in the general fund and $800,000 in the road fund. So that totals $8 million. I probably would want to say we would need all of that funding in order to advertise phase two. In addition to that funding, there's other potential sources, which is Prop 1B local streets and roads, money of $3.1 million. And the reason we show county pavement management funds is this is really the only other discretionary source that we see that is available to the board in order to fund the entire project all the way to Thompson. But as we'll discuss later, that would not be our recommendation. So Prop 1B, the transfer that we're talking about, your board has previously taken action to adopt funding from this funding source for several projects. There's the San Simeon Creek Road Bridge project, the Los Barros Road at Dale Avenue project, the Orchard Avenue widening project, and the Main Street Bridge Cambria project. We would propose shifting these dollars from these projects to Willow Road for several reasons. The San Simeon Creek Road Bridge and the Main Street Bridge Cambria projects are in line to receive additional federal funding, which would supplant the need for the Prop 1B funding. The two projects in Napomo, Los Barros Road and Orchard Avenue, would be deferred, so it would shift money from those two projects to Willow Road to be completed at a later date. We'd have to return to your board with a formal action to adjust the budget, and then we would submit that plan to the State Department of Finance, who would need to approve it. At the same time, we would seek a resolution that would basically repay those 1B funds from future road impact fee collections. The Woodlands funding, this is the remaining payments the Woodlands has for their agreement. Again, next month we expect $2 million, and then in the next two fiscal years, you can see there's basically $5.36 million left to collect from Woodlands. And this money would be available, that $5.3 million, to repay any borrowing that was done for the project. Area 2 Road Improvement Fee Fund, your board approved a $2 million loan in January. That was, I'm going to correct an error in the staff report. It said it was to be repaid within 3 years, but actually it was to be repaid by fiscal year 15-16. So we have a few more years to pay that loan back. Area 2 Road Impact Fees are designated for the improvement of Halcyon Road Route 1 intersection. Even with this $2 million loan, we'd have enough remaining funds in that fund to complete the project development costs, but we would need that loan repaid before construction could be done, which is anticipated in about 2015. So to summarize what is needed for phase 2A and 2B, we have the 15.2 available. In order to do phase 2A, at current cost estimates, we would need to borrow $10.8 million. In order to do the entire connection over to Thompson, would require $14.8 million borrowed funds. And that's, again, a breakdown of the two phases. One is to get us to Highway 101 and the interchange, and Phase 2B to get us to Thompson. We have a few scenarios that we wanted to present to help highlight why we mentioned the county pavement management funds. As it stands now, if bids were to come in as expected, we would need to borrow $3.7 million from pavement management, which we would not recommend because of the impact on the pavement. But there could be a few scenarios that may make it advantageous to borrow a little bit from pavement management funds. For example, if bids come in slightly higher than we estimate, it may be that we need a small loan from pavement management funds to just complete the base bid and get the interchange done. Or if bids came in significantly lower for the entire project, and perhaps we could do the whole project with a minor loan from pavement management funds, we could see recommending it in that situation. But as was stated, if bids come in as expected, we would basically recommend awarding Phase 2A and determine how we should fund 2B, which could be done through a local tax election. And so we've done some estimations on what a local tax election would look like. There's several options, a parcel tax, an assessment district, an ad valorem tax. The parcel tax and ad valorem tax would require two-thirds voter approval. Assessment district would require 50%, but would require an engineer's report to be prepared. So we're leaning towards an assessment district if that was desired. We've gone through some scenarios of funding, perhaps just funding the segment from 101 to Thompson at $4 million, or if we wanted to borrow more money and instead of using county funds, borrow it on the open market, less what the Woodlands is expected to come in the next couple years. That would be about $9.4 million we would need to borrow. Or if we wanted to go for the whole project, including the frontage road, which has been pulled out of the project, basically, it would require about $12.8 million. And so this gives you an idea of what it would cost a typical single-family residence, whether it were a flat parcel tax, an ad valorem tax based on assessed valuation, or an assessment district, which would require an engineer's report to determine the special benefits. So those are all options, but of course, pursuing any of those would probably add $100,000 just to get through the election process, and if we were to fund the project, probably $200,000 to $300,000 would be added to the total project cost.
So to conclude, first off, to mention that we did have a workshop in the community in the middle of June that we covered all these issues and options with a well-attended meeting at the Pomo High School. We did discuss the potential for these election options, depending on if we would want to pursue a 2B type of improvement, either now or in the future. Today, what we're asking is that you accept the status report provided in the board letter to direct staff to develop a revised Prop 1B funds that would redirect up to $3.1 million from the listed projects to Willow Road so that we could pursue a Phase 2A construction, and then provide any additional comments or direction you may have so that we could pursue the project into advertisement. Because of the CTC deadline of awarding the contract, we would anticipate we would need to go out to construction in early October to meet that deadline. I would also note there are representatives from the Woodlands and also the South County Advisory Council here today in the audience if you have any questions of them. That concludes our report. Happy to answer any questions.
I'll go to the supervisor of the district, Mr. Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, staff, for all the hard work, and committee members for their cooperation. Probably been waiting for this for almost 11 and a half years, and glad to see it in front of us. the question I have, and I'd like to make a couple of comments, if I may. The planting of the oaks, the mitigation that we have in front of us, since the project is moving forward in phases, can that be in phases? Rather than spending all that money up front?
Dave, let
me ask one more question in connection to this. Obviously, the reasons are two. One, that we don't have to spend all that money for the mitigation. We go through the phases. We have more money to spend on the road. Two, I believe Mr. Wynn has a different experience of planting oaks in that territory, not knowing exactly what grows and what doesn't grow. I hate to see all that money wasted if it doesn't turn out to be a good crop, if I may put it that way. Those are, if you answer that question, then I'd like to make a couple of comments, if I may.
Certainly, Dave Flynn with Public Works. For the oak tree mitigation, as you know, the work being done in phases, we would already have commitment to plant oak trees from the first phase. I would imagine that's just a few acres, given the magnitude of trees removed with that portion of the project. When we move to phase two, the tree loss is really involved with what would be phase 2A, being that the existing woodland habitat exists almost exclusively on the west side of the freeway. So as we look to the other phases of a phase 2B or a 2 or a 3 of the frontage road, there really is no oak tree or oak woodland habitat loss. So we would really need to commit ourselves to the entire 22 acres. Regarding to the survivability of the oak trees, I know our project manager, Dale Ramey, has done some extensive pilot growth testing of oak trees down there, and I'll let him respond to that.
I think your microphone's not on yet. Just push that little green button on the microphone.
It's on the stand.
Down at the base of the stand.
Right. Take base. Just follow the mic.
Dale Ramey, County Public Works. We did work with the Dana Association in a pilot program to see which would be the best method for propagating the oak trees. So we planted acorns, we planted seedlings, we planted them with cages, we planted them with fertilizer, we planted them with mulch, we planted them with protective shoots. They really did a thorough job on this. And what they determined was that planting the acorns gave us the best results. The acorns with a cage and a protective shoot on them to keep the animals from eating them. So their recommendation was to collect acorns, which has been done, and to go ahead and plant those. I was out there within the last month looking at the well site that we're going to use to irrigate the system, and those trees are still growing. I mean, nothing's been done to them for 2 years at this point.
Thank you. I can give you all the acorns you want. I've got oak trees all over.
I wonder if I could just add in on mitigation, oak tree mitigation.
Sure,
if you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
And then we'll come back to your comments.
Yeah. Who's responsible for monitoring the mitigation program? Who are we responsible to make sure this works?
Who are we responsible to?
Yeah, I mean, this is a mitigation coming out of the EIR.
That's correct.
We haven't got the permits for this project yet.
We've got environmental clearance for the work.
Okay.
And this was a we worked through Caltrans to get their approval on the site and what we were planning to do. So with that, we proceeded ahead with the design, which we'll have completed shortly. As far as planning and irrigation for the system. Then we'll work out a maintenance agreement, and I believe that we're going to do that with the Dana Association at this point.
Session. You're good?
I'm good with that. I just want to be sure that some testing has taken place and we weren't going to spend this money because what is it, $2 million?
That's what we're estimating at this point.
Yeah, it's a lot of money to be sure that we're going to get good results. Going back to the pictures that we had to phase one and phase two and phase three, can you bring that up, please? Just if anybody else knows. Thank you. either way, talking to the, being present at the town hall meeting, and just to maybe ease up the pain for my colleagues for hopefully getting a unanimous support, I would have got a comment on phase 2B, because I think that's where the most money that needs to be borrowed is needed. And my goal, and as what I hear from the community, our goal has always been to give the community a secondary access, which is badly needed. Because as traffic gets congested on Taft Street, cars are parked with emissions, everything else, this will ease up the pain, not just for the traveling public, for the air quality as well. Question and comment that coming to the Thompson Road, which will give us access to the both sides of the freeway, southbound and northbound, on and off, what is the max that we need to have at that point? In other words, how much more money you need to borrow that's not already been approved? Because my understanding is this board, not necessarily the very same my colleagues here, but the board itself at one time did approve the, as you mentioned in your report, the $6 million general fund borrowing and the rerouting or borrowing from the Area 2 money, and the two roads that within the community that can be deferred, even though one of the roads has been a problem for us, but adding those flashing lights has saved us a lot of the problems that were existing. So coming to point 2A, phase 2A, can you bring back the chart that how much money you need and where the borrowing is going to be?
Dave Flynn with Public Works. In this table, it shows essentially the phase 2A and phase 2A and 2B breakdown. So the differential to cover the cost in 2B, the extension from 101 to Thompson, is approximately $4 million.
I understand that, and hopefully as we move forward with estimates coming lower, that can be added. But going to phase 2A, you show $10,800,000. But how much of it is already approved?
So of that $10.8 million, your board took action in January to provide a $2 million loan from Area 2. If your board so chose to direct us to put approximately $3 million from 1B, then that would bring us down to approximately $5.8 million needed to be loaned to the project to move Phase 2A forward. With the anticipated revenues from the Woodlands over the next 2 years, we would see repayment done for both the general fund and the Area 2 loan really over the next 5 years. That would be a combination of the Woodlands funds as well as the next 5 years of road impact fee revenues.
So the borrowed money, the ones that coming from general fund, will be paid by the Woodlands commitment moving forward within the years you guesstimate. And just to give a level of satisfaction, I hope that it will come across that way, that as we speak, the Shea Homes are the ones who are selling. And so far, they've been, they have addressed their commitments. They have come through paying us the road fees, because also it works in their favor, because otherwise it will go back to the higher cost of fees that weren't in place when their project went forward. Is that true? So there's an incentive for both parties to move this forward, and it's an incentive also for the Woodland project to bring that money forward as scheduled, because otherwise the new fee kicks in.
Dave Flynn with Public Works. To clarify that was an agreement that was approved by your board, entered into with the Woodlands Group some 3 years ago, that allowed for the payment under an established plan and under fees that were adopted back in 2007. So typically those fees are about, I'd say, 15% lower than what current fees for road impact fees are. So their incentive to continue under that agreement would be to pay at this lower fee rate. In terms of discussions we have with the Woodlands Group, they have certainly indicated that they would be honoring their commitment for the foreseeable future. I know Mr. LaLoggia is in the audience, and maybe he could address any specifics you would have on that.
I just bring those comments for it, Mr. Chair, because I know that borrowing money at this with this economy is a concern. But the borrowing has been approved in the past, but we also have a project that's been moving forward on the level of success in comparison to what's going on in the market, and that will be the source of repay for the general fund borrowing that we have in place. I'll spare the rest for when we come back after public comment, if I may.
Okay. Yeah, all this borrowing sounds like the state and federal government. I'm more concerned about how we're going to get paid back and the guarantees of that being paid back. So hopefully we'll hear from Mr. Lalogia and others that are going to give me a little bit more comfort in that regard. I'm going to go to Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will or Dave, I wonder if you could bring up the three scenarios of the county pavement management funds that we looked at. So if phase 2A, I guess, comes in as we hope, there's no need or desire to come back to go for that $3.7 million, is that correct?
That would be up to your board. We would not recommend using $3.7 million of pavement management to get to Thompson, but your board could choose to do that or could choose to let the community vote on a local tax to continue the project to Thompson.
But you foresee that there's a possibility under these scenarios that you might have to come back for some of that money?
Yeah, there are a couple scenarios depending on how low bids perhaps come in, which we've been seeing quite frequently lately, where a small loan from pavement management, we might be able to get the whole project done, or we may not need any from pavement management. Or, okay. Unlikely, if bids came in higher than estimated, we may need a small loan from pavement management just to get the interchange completed.
So then, if things go as hoped for to get to 2B, that's when the recommendation is to go to the community for an assessment district eventually. Is that correct? That's rather than borrow from the pavement management.
Dave Fleming with Public Works. To clarify that, I think to go out to bids for construction this fall, the first action we would need from your board is whether the Proposition 1B monies could be directed into this. With that action and the general fund reserve allowed to proceed with this, then we would have certainty that phase 2A could be pursued. And you know, perhaps, as Will notes, we may have to have a contribution if bids show a little higher. I would suspect that in November is when we would open bids on this project, and that point in time is when we would look at these scenarios to see if any pavement management funds would need to be contributed to just kind of put us over the top, including building phase 2B. We have seen bids typically coming in 10 to 20% below estimate, so it wouldn't be unreasonable to see that occur. If the bids come in with the estimates that we already have in hand, that would be the point where we would come back to your board with an award action, and phase 2B would be an optional item. And then if that clearly came in, you know, $4 million over what actions have been compiled to put together the funding, then that would be something your board would need to look at, a potential election, if that was desired.
And if there was a need under one of these scenarios to dip into some of the pavement management funds, how would that be paid back?
That would be paid back through the road impact fees. Typically, we've been seeing about $500,000 per year revenue. That's down considerably from the higher years where it was pushing over $2 million per year. But at $500,000 a year is what we would consider to be a realistic estimate for the foreseeable future, say the next 5 to 10 years.
And are these fees based on the Omo area or countywide? I mean, in terms of drawing to pay back?
Yeah, strictly these would be from Area 1 to Pomo, which really is the area served by primarily Tuff Street and Willow Road, and would be the ones that see the benefits of the Willow Road project.
Thank you.
Mr.
Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to get back to a little more detailed discussion of repayment, probably, I think, best after public comment here. But I wanted to clarify from my own mind the question of the funds needed to be able to go out to advertise this project. Your position sounds like we could approve, if we chose to approve, a certain amount of borrowing in the neighborhood of $10.8 million. We would have a purse of $26 million, and we would go ahead and advertise. We're at a point then where we could advertise Phase 2A with Phase 2B as an option and see what happens. Is that how we could work it?
Yeah, that's correct. As long as we had the ability to amass that additional $10.8 million, then we can go out with confidence that a Phase 2A project is certainly viable, and we would advertise the 2B as an additive bid item.
But we wouldn't need to have identified $4 million in order just to advertise and find out what 2B would cost then.
That's correct.
Okay, that's a good thing. In terms of your community outreach, a couple of things. I'd be interested, those members of the community might speak to this as well. If we move the Prop 1B funds as you recommend, there will be deferral of a couple of safety projects within the Pomo. And I guess, have you discussed with the community the consequences of that and received any community input on the deferral of those to Los Barros and Dale and the orchard widening?
Yes, we did clarify that at our meeting in June, that these would essentially be put off to an unknown date. We didn't really hear any specific concerns or complaints about doing so. If anything, by making Willow Road through to the interchange, we would see a reduction in travel demand on those other corridors where the 1B monies had previously been earmarked. So, in general, it would be faster time, travel times for the traffic, and then a reduction in the vehicle load, which would result in probably reduction in collision frequencies on these other outlying roadways.
And along the same lines, you discussed the fact that Phase 2B may or may not be able to be accomplished. Did you get any community feedback if 2B wasn't able, if the extension from the freeway to Thompson was not able to be completed? Did you receive any community input there?
I think on the 2B, they understood the financial constraints that this project has always moved forward with. So there wasn't any overwhelming concern about not getting that. I believe there is kind of that fundamental traffic going to the high school, where those people who have to go to the high school would certainly seek to benefit by having that leg built sooner rather than later.
And that's part of the discussion I'd like to come back with, Mr. Chairman, is as regards the potential of community contribution to funding this, and we'll get to that at an appropriate time.
Okay, Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I'm a witness to what Mr. Dave Lenny is telling you, Mr. Gibson, that all these concerns were shared publicly, and we had input, and they understand the process we have to go through. Obviously, it'd be a wishful thinking on my side to say that I'd like to see the entire project go through all the way to Thompson, but Phase 2B will require some, unless the bids came way too low that we can go through without any additional funding. But as you will bring this up, I'd just like us to have this thought before we get to that point, that public participation means additional taxes any which way you look at it. My concern for the time being is that the NCSD, Nipomo Community Service District, will be having a Prop 218 to, or whatever they choose to have, to pay for their water. I just don't want us to be competing on the same ballot at any given time. I'd like to see one project move ahead of the other. If we can go through the end of Phase 2A with what we have in place, put 2B all the way to A and put 2B aside, understanding that that requires some kind of a participation. That means going to the folks within the Nipomo community and asking them to participate. At the same time, Nipomo Community Service District will be going for their water needs. I'd rather have them go ahead of us, because that is as important, as much of a necessity as I see that the circulation needs in Nipomo. So
So I want to be very careful as how we approach that for the reasons that I think that should be ahead of us, and I consider the water needs to be a priority. I'm willing to work any which way we can here at our level to be sure that we go through 2A. My previous concerns were Caltrans, because Caltrans were giving us their input as far as not approving the intersection without the entire length to 2B, but I'm very happy to see that they have worked with us and are agreeable that 2A will be satisfactory. And for that same satisfaction, I'm coming here with the staff to ask my colleagues' support that we look into 2A, all the way to the end of 2A favorably, and 2B, which will require that addition, be allowed, let NCSD go ahead with their project ahead of us, and we'll come back and see where we are at a given point. I just want us to be able to think about that before we come to a conclusion.
Okay, before I go to the public, I have a couple. This sounds to me, I mean, there's an awful lot relying on the Woodlands guaranteeing the payment to the county. I'm anxious to hear from Mr. Loggia about that guarantee. And the payback to the general fund, I understand how the pavement management will be collected relative to future projects from road impact fees, but how is the general fund going to be paid back? By the same means?
You could put any stipulation you want on priorities of which gets paid back first. The Prop 1B, we would see that not being repaid for probably 15 years with just coming from road impact fees. That's kind of that would drop to the bottom of the list. But as far as the Area 2 road impact fee of $2 million and the $6 million in the general fund and road fund borrowing, the $800,000 from the road fund, that can be deferred. We think we have enough in the road fund to cover that. But the $5.2 million in the general fund could easily be covered by the remaining $5.36 million to come in from Woodlands. And then road impact fees would pay back Area 2. And we anticipate Area 2 and general fund could be repaid within 5 years, assuming Woodlands pays and we get the $500,000 that we've estimated. Just to give you kind of an idea of road impact fees separate from Woodlands in Area 1, back in the boom days, say 3 years ago, three, 4 years ago, we were collecting over $1 million in road impact fees annually. Then when the recession hit, '08-'09 was the lowest year, and it was about $200,000 we collected. 9-10, which just finished, we collected about $400,000, and that's separate from Woodlands. So I think Woodlands is where the development's occurring, so even in the unlikely event Woodlands didn't make their payments, as Dave mentioned, the fee would kick in at current fees. Building would still be occurring there, so in the long run, the county would receive more money. It just may take a little bit longer to be repaid through road impact fees.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think managed debt is okay. Debt is okay if it's well managed in that regard, but I'll just go to the public at this point, because I'm really curious to hear from some of the folks out there about our borrowing practices.
Creditworthiness.
Creditworthiness, yeah. Mr. Loggia, followed by Jessica Berry, please. Good morning, sir. I think it's still morning. It is.
Good morning. Jim Loggia with Woodlands Ventures. I'm here to review the agreement that we had, started in 2006. The agreement was established so that Woodlands Ventures, as a project, would advance road fees on an annual basis. That agreement was amended in 2008. The total amount being paid by the Woodlands is $17,300,000. And to date, we've paid about $10 million. Annual payments that have been made since 2006, and an additional payment that will be made in August of this year of $2 million. The final payments are in August of 2011 of $2.5 million and a little over $2.8 million in August of 2012. If you were to ask me to guarantee those payments, I probably could say no. I can't do that. However, just as some history, everybody understands the condition of the market, we continue to make our payments. We continue to sell homes at the Woodlands. It is a joint effort between Shea Homes and Woodlands Ventures in the payment of these fees. And we have some substantial benefit. The benefit is not only in the reduced fee, or the fee that was established at that time, fixed that traffic fee for us, but also provided some conditions in our agreement that allow the project to move forward on a phased basis. Those are two critical issues for us, and it would take a lot more than what's occurred over the past couple years for us to jeopardize those. We have mechanisms in place to move forward. Those are with lending and with Shea Homes. So, again, I cannot guarantee, but we've been through a lot. We've made those payments, and it's our intention to continue making those payments.
Question, Mr.
Answer any questions?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, if you might, Mr. Lologia. Thank you so much for being here. Can you speak a little bit to the composition of the participants in Woodland Ventures? Shea Homes is the construction company. And is there anything you can tell us about what the partnership, Woodland, it's an LLC, who participates there?
Sure. Woodlands Ventures is made up of a partnership, which includes ourselves as the Woodlands principals and John Scardino, as well as Lehman Brothers. And it's a fund of Lehman Brothers, so it is still in position. So that is the ownership of the Woodlands project. Shea Homes actually purchased lots on a takedown program that began just slightly, in fact, about the same time that this agreement was established. And they have continued to take down those lots on an annual basis. They are the building partner, although we do build some homes in there. They build the majority of them. To date, we have about 450 occupied homes, and there's probably another 60 in the ground there. And last year closed about 90 units. Expect this year to be about the same with an increase in 2011. Again, is a venture, if you want to call it, with Lehman and ourselves, but a partnership with Shea Homes for the construction. We've completed a building there that's approximately $30 million in for the association. The golf course, actually two golf courses that are complete, and as I said, about 450 homes that are occupied right now.
And is Shea Homes a publicly traded corporation?
They are the largest independently owned corporation in the United States, yes.
Independently owned or
independently owned?
So not publicly?
Not publicly.
They're not a public.
That's correct.
And the Lehman Brothers, I'm sorry to sound a little like a loan officer, but, you know, it's a little bit.
Thanks.
It's a little bit of where we are. I mean, mm-hmm. That's a significant issue in terms of how we parcel scarce resources here. Mm-hmm. And you say this, the other part of Woodland Ventures is Lehman Brothers as a specific fund that they...
It is a specific fund for that project only, and the fund is in good condition at this particular point. The fund actually has been in place since the acquisition and has not been part of the original Lehman company. It's a separate fund.
Thank you. We have another question over here. Rather than talk about a venture, this has probably been an adventure.
Pardon me?
Mr. Hill.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up, if I could, Mr. on the Lehman Brothers, since we know it was the institution that collapsed. So how does this fund guarantee its stake, if you could explain, in this venture?
How does the fund guarantee?
Lehman Brothers, as far as we know, it is no more.
No. It is a separate fund that raised money for this particular project that was separate than the mother company, let's call it.
Okay.
And that fund is in existence. There are a number of those funds still out there. There are a number in Orange County and across the United States, funds that were established separately from the mother company, and individual investments in a particular project. And that's what we have in the Woodlands.
And the cash is there.
Pardon me?
And the cash is there.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Jessica Berry, followed by Dan Woodson, please.
Thank you, Chairman Meacham. My name is Jessica Berry. I'm with San Luis Obispo Council of Governments.
We are the regional agency charged with programming STIP funds, $10 million of which are on this project, as well as the RF funds, $1 million of which are on the phase one of this project. And I would like to express some disappointment on our part. In 2006, when this project was funded through, the $10 million was funded through the STIP program, it was the definition of the project, the description, the project limits were from Pomeroy to Thompson, including the interchange and the frontage road. So we are disappointed to see that the frontage road is no longer included in the project and that that extension from the interchange to Thompson is in question. So that's primarily why I'm here today. We have concerns. It was a regional project when we funded it, which is why we put as much money as we did in the time frame that we put it in. And if that project is scoped down to just being the extension to the interchange and the interchange, it becomes much less of a regional project and different than what our board assumed during the programming of that $10 million. I do appreciate and want to commend staff and their efforts to fund this, to find creative ways to fund a project such as this at a time when the economy is just not doing what was expected when it was originally programmed in 2006. But we do have concerns about how much relief it's going to provide to Tuft Street interchange and the regional nature of the project at this time.
Based upon this discussion, is there any, are any of these funding mechanisms that are now being expressed, are there any of these in of concern or in danger of being depleted somewhat from
the ones that are currently programmed on the project?
Yeah.
No. In fact, the CTC did allocate the $10 million recently, and those would be in question if the board decided not to move forward. The county is obligated to award or to go out to bid and award contract on this project now that the CTC has allocated those funds. Were the county not to do that, those funds would be lost to our region. So we would definitely not want to see that happen.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up as well with Ms. Berry. When you say that with the project being reduced, not including all the way through both, I guess, what we're calling Phase 2B and finally Phase 3, and you say that would no longer be viewed by the COG as a regional project, does that mean that it would no longer qualify for future STIP funds?
Well,
how do you see that as, I mean, in terms of the ultimate impact on?
I guess it would be fair to say that our board would be evaluating this project differently were it to be programming this money now, because of the, if it doesn't include that extension and it no longer includes the frontage, it's not the same project that the SLOCOG board approved funding for in the past. It still has some regional benefit, and I've discussed that with county staff, but it is a different project now. As far as additional funds coming forward, our board would have to decide if they would want to add money to a project that they originally assumed was fully funded, and that would be a decision our board would have to make at a later date if the county were to come forward with more, with another request.
But is staff going to ask the COG board, which we all serve on, to revisit the current commitment, or
no? The current commitment is done.
And so I guess then the next question would be, and I don't know if the county staff would answer this, but if they were asking for more money, it would seem that the COG staff would not recommend that, considering that the original amount of money that was allocated was based on the entire project. Mm.
That is possible. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Sagan.
Yeah, I just want to remind us all that we serve on, we are the members of the SLOCOG board, so what you're telling us is, I don't think it's news to a point, but the project is still the project, and the future of the project is going through all the phases. Just because we have made different decisions on SLOCOG board because of the economy and what's not coming to us from state and federal level, that has taken into consideration, and I just didn't want to see another dent put on this project today by your presentation. We're not forgetting that the rest of the project is to be out of the picture. It's still part of the project. We're going through phases just because
the way the economy has responded to our needs, from growth fees that obviously comes from housing industry, and it's just not happening.
Right.
But those of us who've been here long enough, myself 40 years, I've seen us go through this. So just because we're hit the bottom doesn't mean that we're going to stay there.
Right.
It might be slow recovering, unlike in the past. But our history, if it's with Woodlands recovering some of those expenses and them coming through with their promises that without guarantees, but still promise a promise. But I'm looking for some cooperation from all sources to make projects go forward.
Mm-hmm.
We have given money, we have borrowed money to other projects within the county, within the community. I want to respond to your concerns shared here. I wish that had come to me prior to its coming to this board here this morning, but that's a discussion I will have with Mr. DiCarli, because he has been part of this discussion from many years ago when the borrowed money was at $12 million, and Mr. Gibson and I attended a meeting with Mr. DiCarli to see what's going to happen to stip funds,
mm-hmm.
and what would this board support in the long run, understanding that members can change, decisions can be changed, but we brought it down to $6 million, thinking that that's something we can absorb. Thank you for your time, but kind of disappointed in the news that I hear here today, because we always work, Board of Supervisors, Council of Governments, and the CSDs, but never care to have surprises the last minute.
Okay, thank you. I've got another question, but I'll let you go with that. Mr. Woodson, followed by Mr. Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan Woodson. I'm Chair of the Napoleon Traffic and Circulation Committee, and I'd like to say that both that committee and the Advisory Council have been supporting this project for many years now, and we certainly hope you will go along with staff recommendations on this concept. With respect to extending to Thompson Avenue, most of the people I've talked to are very, very excited about getting northbound and southbound on-ramps at the freeway, and they haven't even considered too much beyond that, so I just talked to some people at a picnic a couple days ago about that. And with respect to foregoing these other two projects, I think Mr. Gibson brought this out, one of them is the Lost Barrels channelization at Dale Avenue. And to the best of my knowledge, that's mainly been complaint-driven. I don't know if there's a big accident record on that or not. I don't know anything in the past many years. And with respect to Orchard Avenue widening, I think they could probably accomplish almost as much by controlling a speed limit on that, maybe getting some enforcement. If they had to do a speed survey, if they went out and did it while all the foreign traffic was using it, it'd bring the speed down quite a bit. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wynn, followed by Mr. Eby.
Michael Wynn from the NCSD in Napomo. I'll be brief. On the oak trees, I will tell you that I tried to grow trees on that land that you have now. I planted 75 of them. 50 of them were sprouted acorns. They thrived till they got about this tall and then died. In addition, I put in 25 5-gallon oak trees, and they were watered, they were protected from animals and so forth, but they also died. I want this mitigation plan to work, so my suggestion to you is that you relax slightly the restrictions on what kinds of acorns can be planted there, and don't continue to take acorns from the sandy side of Napomo, try to make it grow in 60 feet of adobe. There are coastal oaks that will thrive in adobe, and I would love to see those established there in the soil that will sustain them. But I have grave doubts as to whether these will work the way they're doing now. But I do wish you well, and anything I can do, let me know. On this project here, in the NCSD, we obviously have serious reservations about going to a Prop 218 discussion. When we're trying to come before the voters this spring and ask them to fund $23 million to bring in a lifeline from Santa Maria. We have serious issues threatening us, our water table. We have had seawater come in and retreat slightly when it rained, but it'll come back in if we have another dry year. To us, this pipeline takes overwhelming priority, and we hope that you will respect that and support us in that as well. So I urge you to go ahead with this project, do everything that you can. Hopefully the bids will come in low enough that you can do the whole thing. But please do not go out to a 218 until the water situation is stable. And lastly, a few seconds left, I do want to commend Professor Hill, an English professor on this board, who has restrained himself from saying to be or not to be. That is the question.
Speaking of to be or not to be, Mr. Eby, followed by Jerry Bunin. Sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Eby from the Pomo. I just want to say, first off, I support the staff recommendation to develop a revised funding plan for this program. It's really time to move on this. Time is of the essence, and I appreciate being a fiscal conservative myself. I appreciate your concern about how this is going to be paid back. I might offer that it's going to be easier to pay it back if you implement it now than later, because of two reasons. One is, as Dale Ramey says, roads are cheap now. We've heard that bids are coming in 15 to 20% lower than expected. 15 to 20% of the $30 million program is about, could be $6 million. That could pay for the phase 2B extension. So it's very possible that if all the stars come together right, if we get the STIP and the SLPP funds before they expire in December, and if we get good bids in the low bid environment, that we'll have a double whammy that'll allow us not to go out for a local tax initiative. And that would be the best of all worlds. Low-cost program, no local taxes, get the thing done, and possibly before Dale Ramey and I, who I remember working on this program as a young boy, perhaps we will see this before we leave Napomo. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And my final request, Mr. Bunin.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. My comments are basically to support the assessment district or some equivalent and the full project. I read the staff report twice. I watched the PowerPoint presentation, and I don't think I've ever seen anything that felt quite as complicated as this does. A couple of times I felt like I had a jigsaw puzzle and there were broken pieces and there were missing pieces. Supervisor Hill made some really interesting comments at the Climate Action Plan workshop the other day that I thought were really germane to this. One of the things he noted is that the discussion so far has done a really poor job of explaining the real costs of infrastructure and the changes that we need to the public. The public doesn't understand what they're going to pay for some of these things. This discussion is about an existing infrastructure deficiency. New construction will pay its share for meeting future needs. We need to have the existing residents be part of the solution in paying for the fixing today's problems. When I look at moving money around, borrowing from one fund to pay another, getting a loan and repaying it back in the future, it seems like a bunch of smoke and mirrors. And if I was a Napomo resident, which I'm a South County resident, I would not be convinced that there was a need, because I don't think that there's a real serious approach to getting the users to be part of the solution. So I really think that we need to start today and we need to continue the discussion of making sure that the people who live here today are part of fixing the problems that we face today. I think it was Julius Caesar. It was the fault lies not in the stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings. Thank you.
And look what happened to him.
Yeah. I'm not threatening it.
Okay, I have no other requests to speak. I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. And
Mr. Chairman, I might add just some clarifications on the comments. A few different items that I heard about, you know, the regional nature of the project, some of the funding choices in front of you today, and then particularly participation of the community. First, on the regional nature of this, I too have been involved with this project for some time. And when they
since you were a boy,
most likely
had more hair.
And the original action by the SLOCOG board was to essentially program $4 million into this project. And at that time, the project was not to fully fund a project all the way to Thompson. In fact, the description of the projects were in phases, just because of the nature that we know and recognize under the road impact fee is funds come in fits and starts. So initially we had devised a project scope, which was to merely put in the southbound on and off ramp, and then save enough money to put in the interchange coming across, and then keep working our way to the east. So the idea from the get-go has always been to construct from west to east on this project. And the initial STIP monies were essentially in line with doing so. Subsequent to that, the COG board did program an additional $6 million for this project, as it was moving ahead, ready to go, and we had feasible phases that we could pursue. Along those times, too, that was when Caltrans, though, said that a phased interchange would not work. We would have to build a complete interchange. And so that's really been the scope of the project. And I think that's what is before you today, is a full interchange that's functional. When we look at the regional nature of the project, the traffic load is clearly to the west. We've done extensive modeling over the years on this, and the traffic load that we're trying to move is really between the Highway 1 corridor and the 101 corridor. This also serves all the points to the five cities areas too, as traffic is currently routed under Los Barrios Road to points in Oceano or the state beaches. So there's clearly a regional nexus with the project, even at 2A. 2B traffic, when we model that, is really those trips heading towards a high school or the lesser developed area of Old Town of Pomo. So it is surprising that COG would see it differently now as opposed to what the project has transpired to be. I think in terms of participation from the community, your board has had to deal with escalating road impact fees, I'd say, for the last 10 years. And if anything, the development down there has shouldered a significant amount of increases. We used to have fees that were way down around $2,000 a trip unit, and if anything, that's escalated to approaching $12,000. And I know through many painful hearings and meetings out in the community, that thing had been escalated significantly, well ahead of many other of the local agencies in terms of road impact fees. In terms of the Woodlands and the general fund money, we would look at that as these are actions that your board has taken on previous occasions. First, approximately 3 years ago during the budget cycle, a reserve was set aside for the purpose of assisting this project to fulfill construction. Along the same lines, we had means to carry forward Woodlands contributions or impacts and try to mitigate it sooner by getting an advanced agreement to collect their fee. Now, yes, those two are kind of tied together in terms of we need advancement to fully go out to construction, with the realization that the agreement has been put in place with Woodlands to get the revenues to match the demand. And finally, really the action that we'd be seeking from your board today is, again, direction that this is still a feasible project to move forward with, and that the 1B monies would need to be brought back to your board for action to redirect into this project. That would at least allow us to proceed with the Phase 2A project, meet what is a regional project, and secure the STIP monies and not have any dire consequences of any potential loss of STIP funds to this project or to the region.
Okay. I've got a couple of concerns, I guess, relative to comments Ms. Berry made. In regard to the change of project, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, because there's two parts to that. One, if the change of
of project references the funding capability from the different pots of money that COG gets, or two, is it a policy issue relative to COG? Because I know that if a project changes, mm-hmm. the project description changes and everything, then policy has been from the COG board that they reconsider that project. So which are we speaking of?
Well, the project description that the $10 million is on right now was changed along with the allocation vote of the CTC. So that wasn't something that the SLOCOG board weighed in on to change. But the description from the when it was programmed in the 2008 STIP, when the $10 million total was shown in the 2008 STIP, the description of that project was the full Pomeroy to Thompson, the interchange, and the frontage road. So we did have to change the description of the project when the $10 million was programmed, well, when the $10 million was allocated by the CTC. So the SLOCOG board did not take an action on that change, though probably it should have. So I'm not sure I understand the first part of your question.
Well, I didn't... If the project has changed, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, mm-hmm. would it require reconsideration from the COG board based upon that funding?
I guess we're getting into an area that's a little more difficult for me to understand okay. with the STIP funding. With our RSTP program, definitely we ask our board to weigh in on project description changes. And our RSTP program is much more flexible than our STIP program.
Well, I'm concerned from whatever the board decides to do today, uh-huh. what are you going to be taking back to the COG that will in turn bring back to the COG board?
We will not be making any changes to the funding that's already been programmed.
Okay.
We would not do that at this point. And I do believe that staff has come up with a best solution right now. So the funding that's already on this project is not in danger.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Flynn, all the time that I'm aware of, we always have communicated with SLOCOG staff. Has this been communicated with them?
Yes, over the last 10 years since we've adopted a project study report.
The phases that what we're going through just to make ends meet?
Today's board letter was copied over to...
Because I never... And I'm sorry, I'm not here to shoot the messenger at all. But in the past, where there was any disappointment on behalf of the staff, Mr. DeCarlo had always communicated with me, and we have had meetings. My thinking is, if they were aware of this, and if the message here today is on behalf of the SLOCOG board, unless I missed a meeting because I had a conflict of attending a meeting with the Coastal Commission, I'd like to hear my colleagues here, who also wear the hats of a SLOCOG board members, to tell me that this was a disappointment. And if the message is here is on behalf of the SLOCOG board or SLOCOG staff. Well, I'm assuming the staff has communicated with the other staff. Would have been nice to have some heads up that this is a disappointment or whatever the nature is with what I hear here today.
Mr. Gibson?
Well, in response to Mr. Sajjan, I've heard no discussion at SLOCOG board that about the changes in the project. It was my at least implicit understanding that SLOCOG board and their senior management understood the difficulty of cobbling together funding for any major project in this time of diminished resources. And again, no knock on Ms. Berry for being here, but based on her comment just a minute ago that the STIP funding and other SLOCOG related funding on this is not in any way going to change, I'm curious as to why SLOCOG management asked her to come here to deliver a message that really doesn't seem to bear on our decision today. So I'm puzzled. I appreciate her clarity in confirming that those funds are still programmed for this project without any intention of seeing them changed. I think we need to get on with our discussion as to what to do.
Okay. I'll leave it up to colleagues. I'm ready to make a motion to move this forward, but unless you have comments or other questions.
I do have a number of concerns here. I
I'm generally supportive of what staff is laying out here, but there are some details that I think deserve some very careful consideration. We have been creative in other projects, such as the Vineyard Interchange, where money was advanced through a somewhat different process, certificates of participation. But it was also understood within that community that they had to make some hard choices about investment in an infrastructure, and it's going to be that interchange and not much else in the way of major improvements in Templeton. I think this is an analogous case. So I'm willing to proceed pragmatically here, but as I participate in this process, I'm here to promote the wise use of our general fund dollars and to protect our general fund for the taxpayers of the county as a whole. And we have been able to do good public projects all over this county with the wise use of a well-managed general fund. Should we proceed to do this, I want to be sure that we're being as careful and as prudent as we have been in previous takes. As to the community's participation, when Supervisor Shajan and I worked on the exact amount that we might allocate, or at least designate, I guess is the proper term, in the general fund for this project, my support of that was contingent on a community participation at some level. I didn't specify that. I am comfortable with the idea that Phase 2B becomes an optional project. It seems unlikely, but I don't know. I don't think bids are going to come in low enough to get that part of this project done under $26 million of a total budget. If that project is to be done, if 2B is to be accomplished, I would see it necessary for the community to participate. And part of that is the placement of the high school, and I don't want to dig that issue up, as I spoke rather clearly against the specific location of that high school for a number of reasons some years ago. It's there, it's in business, it's doing a great job educating kids, but I think it's a perfect nexus of community support to get Willow Road extended to Thompson. I think there should be, it is an existing deficiency, and I think the community should contribute if there's a shortfall to get that done. The timing of it, I fully understand that you have other infrastructure issues in Napomo. I would only observe that infrastructure costs money, and the community of Los Osos knows that better than any, and they have been asked to shoulder a tremendous cost. So there will be costs if the community wants infrastructure, but I'm very flexible on working on the timing of how the community is approached.
Mr. Gibson, if I may, sure. Mr. Chair. One thing, I don't know if Mr. Flynn included, with the Phase 2B, which I think is important, but circumstances got me where I am. The right-of-way has already been purchased, so it's there to happen, those monies. So the worst scenario will be behind us, just a matter of bringing money to top it up, blood top it, in other words. So if that gives any level of comfort that the high school is there, the traffic is there, I know why you would have opposed it, and I think many of us oppose it for the reasons of ag, but the project itself has gone far enough to absorb all the right-of-ways, so it's not completely optional, but it will happen sometime in the far future, with the majority of the difficulties have been taken care of as we speak.
Yeah, Dave Flynn with Public Works. As the supervisor indicates, the acquisition of the right-of-way has been accomplished, and as part of the construction of Phase 2A, there is a significant volume of sand, dirt, material that has to be disposed of, which would all be disposed on the Phase 2B site. That is the designated location to haul the material, which would be constructed into a roadway. The elements that are missing that cost $4 million is a bridge over Napomo Creek and then all the asphalt for the roadway. So it would be a long-term still goal to build it under the road impact fee program.
And I would submit it's rather similar to the way we're funding libraries, where we have gone out and purchased the shell, and we need the contribution from the community to finish that. I'd
I'd like to dig just a little bit into the details, because again, my priority is the wise use of the general fund in the execution of this project. And I'm looking at page 10 of our staff report, just as a place to have the numbers in front of us. It's the summary of the sources and uses. Right in the sort of the just above the halfway point here, the previously approved borrowing, we see Area 2 road impact fee cash. We have the road fund, the general fund, totaling $8 million. And then the next line down with a number is the Prop 1B local streets and roads to the tune of 3.1. I would submit my feeling at this point is we should not tap into the payment management funds at all. And my support of this is contingent on keeping this out of the equation. If different scenarios appear down the line, we can consider them. But for the discussion today, that 3.7 stays with the payment management. But as I add up the four line items there, $8 million in previously approved funding and 3.1 in potential borrowing, $11.1 million. I saw on one of your slides that 10.8 is the actual number that gets us to $26 million. So it's a bit of a detail, but I would be interested in reducing the general fund commitment by that $300,000. Again, minimizing the exposure to the general fund. If this is not shaving it too finely, but that's a small $100,000 here, $100,000 there, and pretty soon we're talking about real money. So that's one observation. The second issue that I have is about the repayment of the general fund. And one thing I'm wondering is, we've borrowed from the Area 2 road, we borrow from all these different sources, they all need to be repaid. Can we designate that the general fund gets the first dollars until we pay 5.2, even if it comes
priority?
It's the priority,
right?
That we take road impact fees, we take whatever money's coming in the door, we pay the general fund back first, and we can set other priorities after that, whether it's Area 2 road impacts or whether it's Prop 1B or whatever. But again, my support would be contingent on putting general fund repayment on top priority there.
Can I ask staff? We have the ability to do that, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dave Plum with Public Works.
Our discretion, we can...
The supervisor gives us the first point. Yes, the adjustment of shaving, say, $300,000 between that differential of $11.8 million you see totaled versus the 10.8, sure, that still would secure sufficient funding to move forward with Phase 2A. In terms of the repayment, yes, your board can certainly kind of designate and instruct us in terms of what repayment priority there would be for this project.
Okay. So with that, at this point, I'm supportive of moving forward with those two conditions.
I know Mr. Hill is ahead of me, but if it's okay,
but
I'd
you
like
just
to
keep right on going there.
Yeah, I mean,
it just happened. Willow bring a different notch in my character. The pavement management fund that you speak of, Mr. Gibson, and staff, that's only if we go through 2B. Of the 2A, we're okay without that in the big picture.
I would let staff has made some general comments as to the possibility of using, quote, minor amounts. Which,
but the amount that that's a concern to you is more if the 2B was to move forward at this time, which we're looking at phases in phase 1 and 2A, that will be excluded regardless. But to your satisfaction, they probably need to respond.
Yes, Will Clemens, that is correct. If bids come in as estimated, we don't need any of the pavement management funds to complete 2A. And in fact, it would be $300,000 less borrowing needed just to do 2A.
And if we have to go through B, the decision is not made here today for that additional.
Right.
Will come back
That's
to us.
Fair. The vision that I'm coming to is that we take, reduce $300,000 out of the general fund borrowing, stipulate that it gets repaid first, get right to the $26 million, go out to bid, and let's see where we are when we get the bid
back.
Okay, Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I
concur with Supervisor Gibson's directions, which I think are the most fiscally responsible ways in terms of protecting general fund commitments. So I think that's really a good idea in terms of shaving off the $300,000 and making the priority the repayment of the general fund loan. Since we're not talking about to be or not to be, I don't have to think of what Hamlet would or not would not do. But I also, to follow on Mr. Gibson's comments and Mr. Bean's comments too, which is that community participation, I think, is going to be essential to see this project through. And I think that's it's sort of like almost on everything we need to do in the state at this point, we need to have adult conversations about what the true costs of things are, rather than to find as many ways as we can to not ask people, because there's a, obviously partly because of the economy and partly because there's a desire to be against everything. But we're at a state where, you can't have everything you want and not pay for it. It's just not feasible. And that's the reality of our state and every community within the state. And so I do think that I'm not comfortable either with going in the pavement management funds, because I do think that at some point to see the project through, as we have done in other parts of the county, you have to see where the community's commitment, including the existing community that will benefit from these infrastructure improvements, infrastructure additions, I think that's necessary. I think we can't shy away from basically telling communities, to fix these problems, we're going to need your help.
Well, I think that your analogy of the vineyard project was a good one, because I hear frequently from my constituents, why can't we get funding to do this and do this? I said, well, because you committed to paying back bonds on a project that was deemed to be a priority, and you had to participate in that, so you're going to have to wait until you get some of the things accomplished. So I do agree with that. I just have one other question. And, I believe that this fund that's been set aside from Lehman Brothers, I believe that there's money there to do what needs to be done. But worst-case scenario, that Woodlands defaults on paying those funds, where does that money come from then?
Under the agreement with Woodlands, essentially, if they do not make the deliverment on their payments, they have to pay the going rate of what the 2009 fee is. So they would, as they pull individual permits, they would have to produce
that's
that fee.
That's based upon somebody pulling permits.
Yes,
at some point.
That would be their continued construction. And then payback, although Will had mentioned that with the Woodlands agreement, we would anticipate that all repayment can be done within a five-year period, then if the Woodlands defaulted and we went to more of a permit-by-permit basis, that could be a longer term, 10 to 15 years, say. But that's just an approximation.
I mean, I'd like nothing better than to see this built, and then it stimulates our economy somewhat, and people start building homes, and away we go, and everybody's happy. But I don't know how soon that's going to take place. I see Mr. DeCarli has shown up here. So, Mr. DeCarli, I don't know if you've heard the discussion today. If there's anything that you can add to clarity, or if there's questions of the board relative to COG's direction, I'd appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, perhaps both. And my apologies that I wasn't here a little bit earlier, and I've had my staff here to try and identify some of the concerns raised. I think overall she did a very good job.
She did a great job.
And I have to say, first off, there is obvious disappointment among SLOCOG staff that the entire project isn't built. And I think that's the same disappointment that all of you have, same as a community. That was the intent of at least that initial discussion. It was programmed as initial overall project interchange. It was intended to also relieve Taft Street. The funding simply isn't there. We know that. We've been working with your staff on that issue. We had raised concerns earlier relative to the need to have some kind of a commitment after the STIP was adopted. And we initially talked about a $12 million reservation of some kind, and the board adopted a $6 million reservation of the general fund, subject to future negotiation, subject to bids as they come forward, and basically where we stand today. At this point, the funding isn't in jeopardy. The STIP funds, as Jessica Berry indicated, funding is programmed, providing you move forward with it, the project will go forward. SLCOG staff is happy to see the project moving forward as it is, acknowledging that it is coming in phases. We have a concern relative to the long-term connectivity of a frontage road going south to Teff Street and over to Thompson, because that's part of an overall plan to improve accessibility in all of the North Mesa and Napomo area. And we just want to assure or encourage that that stays part of the overall plan. That's what we do hear from county engineering, that it is part of the plan, and we support that plan. So with that, I'll be here to answer any other questions you might have.
I don't see any, so we're good. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll bring it back to the board.
With that, right. Mr. Chair, if there are no more questions, I'll move that we approve staff's recommendation with the understanding that any recovery from towards the loans will be priority going towards filling in the general fund loan first. And that at this time we're looking at phase 2A. That does not include 2B. Obviously, we'll look at bids coming in for 2B included. But County Payment Management Fund, if it was to be used towards 2B, that at this time the direction, as spoke of by Supervisor Gibson, that won't be a place to be considered for any future funds.
I'll second with the understanding that we've reduced our general fund borrowing to $4.9 million.
And then is there any other discussion relative to the public participation aspect of this, or will that wait?
We have already gone to the public several times with town hall meetings, and Mr. Woodson has the circulation committee meeting has been done a good job. Unless I misunderstood your question, I believe we have been to the public.
No, what I'm talking about is the financial participation from an investor.
For the 2B,
yeah.
if that comes back, once we know.
Okay.
We're not. I don't want to be misunderstood. What I'm saying at this time, because there's another necessity for the community to move forward for their participation for the bringing in the water, which is more of a necessity, that I'd rather see them move forward prior to us considering 2B. If there's a need for 2B, be a community participation.
That'll come back to us. Okay. Okay. Madam Clerk, do you have the motion? You do not. I see you.
The motion is that we approve the staff's recommendation with understanding that as we collect funds for a payback of what we have loaned this project, that the general fund gets the priority filling in the blank prior it paying the other sources of funding we have received, that upwards of phase 2A, we have a savings of $300,000 that should go towards the general fund, less borrowing of that amount of money. And that if we were to go to 2B, depends on what the outcome of the bidding process is, that the county payment management funds will not be available for that phase of the project.
May I ask a question? Just so that I'm clear on the general fund being reduced to $4.9 million, you know, we're not asking for any action today on general fund, but should we need the entire 5.2 based on what bids are on phase 2A? So can we say borrow up to $5.2 million as needed for phase 2A?
If I could, Mr. Chair, my understanding from staff is that we need to put together essentially what amounts to a financing plan in order to be able to go advertise for bids. So my sense of the motion is that our financing plan includes $4.9 million of borrowing from the general fund and other borrowing as indicated, the redirection of Prop 1B funds, stipulation of repaying the general fund first. That gets us out to bid on phase 2A, 2B is an option, and then you're to come back to the board with the results of that bidding process and we'll figure out where we go from there.
I think the misunderstanding was we're only reducing it by $300,000. So it comes down to it 4.9. We weren't reducing it by 4.9. We were reducing it to 4.9.
But you're removing the county pavement management funds from that.
That's where the 2B, if we were to...
Well, my sense of the motion is that the county pavement management funds are not part of the financing plan.
Correct. Okay.
The designation of $5.2 million in the general fund remains,
right,
but we're not going to use it all in this financing.
Yeah, just to clarify, we have to have known sources to have the total $26 million to assure that we go out to bids with Phase 2A.
Correct.
The point of the pavement management funds, or as Will suggests, leaving open the cap on the general fund, is just to provide that flexibility at the time of award, if it is a few hundred thousand dollars over in those cases. So it would be good to have that flexibility. We understand and hear from you clearly that the pavement management fund shouldn't be used for this purpose. Perhaps retaining that $5.2 million, though, does provide some flexibility. But as you direct, that can be also done at the time of award.
Okay. Are we good? Madam Clerk, are we good? Okay. I'll call the question. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Sajian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham.
Yes. I have no request to speak on closed session. Ms. Neal?
Our estimate is about an hour and a half today.
An hour and a half? Good grief. No complaining, Mr. Chair. We'll be back in an hour and a half. Ish. Or so.
Before you go.
Oh, I have one.